So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review, man.
There's a long connection to George Strombolo.
Oh, really?
Because he and Jeff Merrick and their buddy Bill Malkowitz, who from Off the Record.
Yeah.
They used to do a sports show on the Fan 590 called Game, and it was on at like 3 o'clock in the morning. And this was when they were all getting started, I think.
And as they built it up, and
they would just like talk about random topics. Yeah. And it would be like the fun show, like they were kind of like the younger show on the Fan. And occasionally they would do a wrestling segment.
Oh, weird.
And in fact, Big Daddy Donnie would call it, and I think that's what led to the wrestling segment. But that eventually grew into Long.
Oh, crazy! He's like vegan now. He's like lost a ton of weight.
Stravopoulos?
Yeah, he looks crazy skinny. I saw him at Hunger Games a couple weeks ago, and I was like, oh, this is ironic.
Huh.
Yeah. I guess that wouldn't be ironic.
Yeah, coincidental.
Coincidental
or expected?
He looked hungry. I don't know. It's not irony, I guess.
All right, let's do a mic check here.
All right.
1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2.
Let me 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 2, 2, 2. Check. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's probably more my real volume.
Good stuff. So when you do it, you do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
I just count. I used to sing lyrics and stuff, and then I was like, but then you like realize that you just look like an asshole.
Yeah.
Though
when, no, you don't. No.
It's funny though. Some bands that you see like actually like do covers when they sound check and
really
like, do really weird things. Like Rise Against, one time I saw do a grade cover. This like that screamo band from Burlington, Ontario.
Okay.
And they did like a song off their like early record, and Arcade Fire. When we were on that tour, was doing like Jane Says and Jane's Addiction songs.
That's awesome,
and stuff, and to practice and stuff.
That's the stuff that they want to let the fans go crazy about.
Yeah, no, I guess they don't want the fans to hear it because they're doing it in soundcheck.
But people will.
Yeah, I guess it gets out. It. Yeah, I guess I should put that video out there.
What do you guys soundcheck? You just
I normally sit in the dressing room because every time I soundcheck, something bad happens. I chip my tooth.
Really?
Mike on that Arcade Fire tour. We have bad shows and stuff. Actually, that's not true. On the Foo Fighters tour, because everyone took it so seriously, like everyone in their crew, like, is like not seriously in a dick way, but like, this is your job. Yeah, I felt obligated to soundcheck. I'm like, wow, if there's like this many people there for my band that, you know, the least I can do is go up on stage. But I've always found that, like, you know, I don't really need them. I think I always find bands are really demanding, like, turn me up, I can't hear myself.
Yeah.
I don't want to be around that.
You're not like that?
No.
So if you're too low, we have fun.
It's fun. Exactly. Like, I've never been to a show and someone been like, yo, that show was amazing until that one part where you guys were a little out of tune.
I agree with you. Totally.
No one remembers that stuff.
I totally agree with you. I totally agree.
You know? Energy. Energy is all they want, you know?
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah. We'll leave all this.
Speaking of that.
Yeah.
Where's the tap out, buddy?
What a segue. hey, do you want water or anything?
No, I'm cool. I'm okay. Totally chill.
Because, we'll just leave all this in, whatever John wants to
add it out.
Edit, we'll edit.
Yeah, John's sick.
He's sick. Well, I'm about to actually do an intro here.
Oh, this is your intro?
some type of professionalism.
I was hoping for that classic review away, just fade in. You know, where
you
just
could
like,
do that.
Where it's like 20 minutes of dialogue and then you go right in the interview. Or right in the review, sorry.
Choked up.
Please.
What on earth?
This is your stage,
Christy. I've been watching you guys for 3 months. Talking about how you're the foundation of DX. And then at WWE, Shawn and Hunter, they're the foundation of DX. Well, I think you're missing somebody very important. And they deserve at least a little bit of credit. What about Joni Lauer? What about China? Why is she just a blip in the foundation of DX? Because she's just a woman in a man's world? An have to feel like we have to run from this business. Because we're disposable. Those women in the back, Val, you, Tracy, Gail. They're not disposable. I am not disposable. I will continue to fight every single day to get into this ring. I want to wrestle too. I want to be a part of this business so bad. And why? Because I love it. I love it that much. Now, this might be the last time that I'm in this ring.
Welcome to Review Away. This is the voice of Wei Ting, and if you are surprised to hear that, that is because I'm not joined by my usual host, co-host, John Pollock today. John Pollock is sick. In fact, the morning of this recording, texted me in the morning saying, dude, my throat is sore and I cannot make the review tonight. Is there any chance you and our guest can handle the review? And I said, well, I've never done this before, John. I don't know if I can. I don't know if it's within me, but I will certainly try my best. And thankfully, we do have a special guest here today who can fill those shoes. Otherwise, it would just be me talking for 5 hours, and nobody wants to hear that.
John's done those,
yes. But perhaps our favorite guest reviewer on this podcast, Damian Abraham from the band Fucked Up. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm very excited to be here, even if it's without John. But I guess it would have been really tight with John in here.
It's actually a tighter space.
Yeah, it does feel like, you know, like it's bigger, much nicer, but it does feel that tighter because of the way it laid out.
Yeah. We are in our new Review Away studios here here in downtown Toronto. And Damian, give us an update. It's been a while since we've seen
I'm trying to think. Did I see? Yeah, I just got back from the Foo Fighters tour. Nothing has happened. Not too much of a report. My wife and I are having a baby in a couple weeks, so I've been kind of taking it low in that regard.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Yeah, it's amazing. I went to that ROH Border Wars pay-per-view.
Yes.
And I will say that is the best live experience I've ever had. Concert. Show,
what?
Everything. Seeing Chomsky live, better than any of that.
You're saying that Ring of Honor Border Wars show in Toronto beat any concert experience that you've ever had?
Any concert experience. Like, I would say, you know, maybe it doesn't beat, but, like, it brought me back to, like, the early 2000s, seeing, like, No Warning and, like, Haymaker and all these bands that were, like, really, you know, seminal in the formation of my own band, you know, and just being, like, at those shows and getting moshed and beaten up and singing along and, like, having, like, a real good time where you felt a part of the show. And I really think the crowd does not come across when you watch that stream of it.
No. If you could watch it.
Yeah. You can watch it now.
You can watch it
and
now,
it does not carry over how awesome it felt to be there.
Unfortunately not. But you have been to a WWE event.
I've been to a WWE one event, but WWE. I've been to a couple of, what was the ones at the Armory? Up at Downsview Park?
You mean the house shows?
Yeah, no, they were just like local indie shows. I've been to a couple different indie feds. Okay, I've been to like TNA and stuff like that. And obviously this is a pay-per-view, so I can't compare it to a WWE pay-per-view. Whoa, this is very appetizing what just appeared on the screen in front of us.
We go to Harvey's ad.
I think that's actually Quiznos.
Quiznos ad appearing on our TV screen here.
It looks incredible, though. It's like very, very vivid right in front of our eyes.
It's designed to make you hungry.
It is designed.
Therefore, we will hopefully stray away from tangents here.
Yeah, exactly.
Go ahead and get lunch. But
believe me, I'm doing fine. I ate a couple bags of chips on my way down.
All right, good.
I'm ready with sustenance because I know we tend to I tend to yammer.
Part of a rock star's diet.
Exactly. Right. Ketchup chips and, well, no, a real rock star would be like, you know, probably, you know, Cavarsier and champagne.
And
but,
other unmentionables.
But like, yeah, like a B-team indie rock celebrity superstar of a very, very small description like myself, ketchup chips and Coke Zero.
But how would you compare an indie crowd to, say, a WWE crowd? What did
an
you
indie
notice?
Crowd, like, well, I think going to, I was going to say, like, not that they're the same thing. Like, I hate when people are like, ECW was the punk of wrestling, because it wasn't, you know?
Right,
it was,
right.
It's its own thing, and it was its own amazing thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like, but I would say, like, going to a show like this is the equivalent of going to a hardcore show versus going to a stadium rock show, which is going to a WWE event.
Mm.
You know, like, that's not to say, like, CM Punk and, like, I'm sure seeing Daniel Bryan or Brian Danielson live, you know, all these people, and they've got a great Claudio and all these people coming in, but you're still like, you're away from the event, you know, like, yeah. You're separated. And when you're at an indie show, you're in the event, you know, mm-hmm. You're like part mm-hmm. of the show, like the wrestlers react to you. And I think being at this, it was like being at an indie event, but like such a high caliber of indie event. Like,
sure.
It was like being at a, yeah, it was like going to an awesome hardcore show versus going to like just a hardcore show with a bunch of local bands playing.
And there's certainly that feeling that you're in a smaller space with people that are more like you.
Whereas yeah, absolutely.
For a big stadium show or a WWE event, you're in there with maybe people from all sections.
Well, it was crazy. I, like, turned behind me and, like, behind me, like, completely, we were not there together at all, but, like, the dude from Tokyo Police Club.
Really?
And, you know, Born Ruffians, of course, who did the video with Chris Hero, so
right.
They're big wrestling fans, too, and stuff, but it was just like, holy geez, like, you know, we're all here.
That's
and then
hilarious.
A bunch of people from my work at Much Music and stuff, like behind the scenes people and stuff were there. And
there you go.
Yeah, it was a really fun experience. And like that last match when like the crowd was so behind Steen and mm-hmm. just like, I don't know, like maybe it's also because watching wrestling right now, you're so used to seeing things build up and you're like now just waiting for that swerve of disappointment. Mm-hmm. You know, like mm-hmm. you're like, oh, Robert Roode, the babyface champ. I can't wait to watch him. And then they swerve you, and you're like, well, that sucked because that was just like a giant waste. And it's like,
then they build
someone else up, and it's like, they're going to take the, he's going to take the, James Storm's going to snatch the belt away from Robert Roode. And it's like, no, it just sucked. They swerved you again.
Right.
And same with WWE, like that CM Punk, Summer of Punk thing, like being that excited, like telling people, like, no, I know you don't watch wrestling anymore, but trust me, it's so good. It's so good. And then, like, they swerve you and ruin it within. Yeah. 2 or 3 weeks. So to see this and have it feel like it's building to this great moment and knowing that the crowd in Toronto is going to be behind Steen and then to see it happen and unfold the way it should in mm-hmm. like the way it unfolded. Like I just wish it had come through because it felt awesome to me.
No
be there.
Swerving for the sake of swerving.
No swerving. Yeah. Like, and you know, Jim Cornette, like, you know, I guess people probably have terrible things to say about him who have worked with him, I imagine. And people have amazing things to say about him who have worked with him. But something about, like, the way he books when he's, like, with a product, I just, like, there's certain angles that he just knows how they should play out. And, you know, in that traditional sense mm-hmm. of the way things should turn out, not this new kind of lost. Like, and when I say lost, I mean both, you know, lost in the metaphorical sense. And I also mean lost, like the TV show Lost, like where they're where you invest so much time and effort in liking it. And then they screw you over just so they can't. Like, just like
I never watched the show.
Don't waste your time.
Don't waste.
It is like, yeah, when it came out, it was like everyone's like, oh, it's Twin Peaks. It's like Twin Peaks. It is not Twin Peaks.
Okay.
It is nowhere near Twin. Did you watch Twin Peaks?
I never saw that either. Yeah. I don't watch many things outside of pro wrestling.
Really? Yeah. Wow. That's I guess that's what you have to do. I guess that's like, you know.
That's my life.
Yeah, I guess now I can just live vicariously through your suffering.
Did you follow much ROH prior to the show?
A little bit. I like I've you know, that TV show is a pretty hard watch.
Sometimes
it's getting a lot better.
It's gotten a lot better.
It's gotten a lot better. And I think the talent is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I watched you know the you know iPay-per-views or just like catch up on what happened mm-hmm. and stuff. So I follow the product, and it's just like yeah every match on that card had a story that you could get involved in,
yeah,
you know,
and
every wrestler was, you know, on that next level of talent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the cool thing is with a couple of the guys at ROH, they're getting away from guys that look the same. Like there's a couple of champions they had in a row where you're like, you know, obviously they're very different people and different styles and the way they work. But I just think visually, like it's hard to you know, you get kind of a UFC thing going on where it's just like, how can I support with this guy that looks exactly like this guy? I think people go to those visual fallbacks. Like that's why at one point when you had Chuck Liddell looking one way, and mm-hmm. you know, you'd have him against a clean cut looking opponent, it looked, you had that juxtaposition.
Yes. True. I know what you're saying. Like, you know, like maybe Davey Richards and Roderick Strong.
And once again, nothing to take away from their talents, but like I just prefer to see them in roles against like Chono. Is that his name?
Masahiro Chono?
Yeah. Oh no, what's his name? With the goatee and the buzz. What's the that guy's name?
Yeah, I think that's who you're talking about.
Yeah,
like,
the undefeated. No. The Italian guy. What's his name? God.
Oh, Ciampa.
Ciampa. Chono. Ciampa. Like, just seeing, like, you know, like, I'd love to see him against Roderick Strong because there's, a real different kind of vibe to the what they look like and stuff like that. I like those sort of when worlds collide kind
or
of
or Kevin Steen. Completely does not fit the mold.
Exactly. And same, like, with this show, like, Samoa Joe during that first Samoa Joe run. Yeah. And, like, which I think... The reason I was listening to you and John be like, why did you pick this as such an arbitrary pay-per-view? Yeah. But to me, this is like kind of like this is the beginning of, you know, because Russo and Angle kind of start at the same time. And to me, this is like when you see TNA just fall the complete apart. But you also have still like the tail end of this amazing era that is like this is the third match that they had against each other.
Yeah.
In Final Destination 2007, which is what we're reviewing today. I don't think we've said that yet.
Final Destination 2007. What a segue, Damien, because yes, we allowed you to pick the show today.
Yes.
We were all very curious, but you just explained it wonderfully. And were you much of a TNA fan at this point?
I was. Like, TNA was kind of like, you know, I knew about ECW. I watched a little bit of it when it was happening. I wasn't a huge wrestling fan. So then when I started getting really into wrestling, it was kind of like TNA was like the second promotion. And I thought they were doing like cool, unique things. Like, the X Division was great. It had a really different feel. Like, I thought Scott Gamore, who was booking for a while, and I thought he did great stuff. Like, I thought it was a different feel to it. Like, it felt like a different show as opposed to the B show.
As opposed to WWE Lite.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think this is like... You know, this is where you see you start seeing the WCW specter,
right?
And it's still like you still have that amazing ring work in some of these matches, like
absolutely.
But yeah, like it's just you also have these ridiculous crap storylines being laid on top at this point, and this pay per view to me is like the end of one chapter and the beginning of a terrible, terrible chapter of TNA, which led to an even worse chapter of TNA.
Which is
leading to an okay chapter right now.
For the time being, absolutely. I'll be relying on you, Damien, to remind me of some of these storylines, because I was following, I was working for the law, in fact, but I, for the life of me, I don't remember anything that happened.
You know what also is, here's the problem with TNA now, and, you know, I want to get excited about it because the booking's starting to make sense, and it's good. But you've seen all these matches happen under the worst circumstances possible. So, like, you're like, I can't seriously take this now. You've seen these same guys be thrown in these terrible feuds that are dropped, like, 2 weeks later. And, like, factions that are forgotten about 3 weeks after the fact or a week after the fact. And it's like, it doesn't matter how good the product is now. You'd have to start over.
I think it's a problem with there being so many pay-per-views, too.
And oh, yeah.
You know, 12 months out of the year, you're going to have to pair this guy with this guy. And not even the 12 months out of the year. Every week you do a show, you're going to have to pair a guy with another guy. And there are only so many combinations you can have before everything starts to go stale.
Yeah.
Right? But we go back to 2007. And, Damien, I guess, how did you find the show? How did you...
A couple years ago, they started doing those TNA deal bags.
Okay.
And they're like, you get an extra large TNA shirt, or double XL I could get. Oh, I could get a triple XL, because this is my heaviest. Like, this is about 4 years ago now. And, like, five DVDs and four DVDs, and I think that was all you got. In a bag that was signed by... Oh, what's his name? The color guy.
Don West.
Don West
signs
the bag, right? And I'm like, I'm like watching this and I'm like, well, you know, I got a couple TNA DVDs, like, look, Bloodiest Battles and like a couple like, you know, X Division Greatest Moments. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, it'd probably be more of that kind of stuff. I wouldn't mind, you know, it's cheap. So I ordered it. Sure enough, it's a bunch of pay-per-views that like DVDs, but this is the one that I watched that, I remember that Samoa Joe feud happening when it was kind of like Kurt Angle and Samoa Joe building up. And this is like, if this had been the last one, this would have been such a good way to kind of end, you know, like, and then have them go off and kind of start other storylines. And, you know, you eventually have them come back and it would have made, you know, like, it would have made that much more special if this had been the final one. Like a 30-minute Iron Man match. And then you have, like, you know, I think they had them back together feuding again, like before the month was over.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I remember how excited we all were when the Kurt Angle announcement was made, when they showed that video at the end of that pay-per-view, and it caught everybody by surprise because nobody knew about it. And somehow they snuck Kurt Angle into this hangar to shoot this awesome video under everybody's nose. And when it debuted, like, we had Samoa Joe on actually that night on the
Law. I've heard the interview with him.
And like, Joe was like, himself was just like in his hotel room partying and just screaming excited at the possibility that he would be able to wrestle Kurt Angle. And sure enough, they went ahead and did it like within that month.
Well, they had that first contact thing with the headbutt.
And that was really good.
Yeah. Oh, everything about that feud, I think, was great. Like the fact that you had one win one, you had Joe. You know, I think Joe's streak obviously has to end, and Kurt Angle ending it, I think, is a cool way to have it go out.
Right.
And then you have Joe come back and win the next one. Mm-hmm. And so this is like the final blow off to the feud, right?
Yes.
And it's a 30-minute Iron Man match, and I think this is like the way you can have like the end of the chapter, the end of the story. But, you know, this is kind of the end of the chapter.
Well, for me, like, I liked everything they did with the headbutt, but I felt like, you know, sort of like this Brock Lesnar deal that we're seeing right now.
They
I thought it,
it
was too soon.
Yeah, I think you do. I think one of the things is it's because you have that pay-per-view every couple of months. I think that thing with Brock Lesnar is you don't want to see him and Cena go back and forth, where you do want to see Samoa Joe and Kurt Angle go back and forth. Like, I think it's better for TNA to have Samoa Joe and Kurt Angle both come out of it strong, whereas I think with WWE, you want Brock Lesnar to come out of it strong. You would have wanted, you know, I think everyone... Every single person on the internet who enjoys wrestling could have, you know, I don't think anyone was like, yeah, you really need Cena to win this first one.
Yeah.
And that's going to make a better program. And I think, like, there are certain things you can't ever undo. You can't have you can't take back Nash beating Goldberg, you know, you can't take back these things and the character's never the same afterwards. And I think, you know, Samoa Joe, having him lose to Kurt Angle in the way he loses in that first match, I think he still comes off it really strong. You can have him keep going from there. You know, it's not like he's losing to someone not competitive. And so, but I know what you're saying. Yeah, they could have kept it. They could have prolonged it and stretched it out.
I just felt like they could have told the story of each guy heading towards that fight. Right?
Yeah. I guess also, but then you also have, like, what do you do with Samoa Joe leading up to that? Like, he's beaten everyone in the company and, you know.
Yeah. We head back now to 2007, and actually how I found this show was through, I didn't even know about this, but apparently TNA is offering their entire pay-per-view back catalog on YouTube for 99 cents a show. I don't know if they're all 99 cents, but this one was from 2007.
Wow.
So I had a hell of a time trying to find this, otherwise, like through my usual means. But on YouTube, you pay 99 cents, you get the whole show in... excellent quality. It's fast, so a great deal.
You don't get a Don West autograph.
You don't get a Don West autograph.
So wait, you know, you still lost out.
What was the shirt that you got?
It's like just it's a TNA with the red logo,
the
TNA
red logo.
And then XXXL, and I was wearing it a lot in shows because I was like, oh, TNA's on the way up.
Shows? Indie wrestling shows?
We were playing shows.
Oh, like and your I'm, concert, yeah, you would wear a TNA
there's
shirt.
Like, we played a Brooklyn Bowl show, and I had it delivered to Matador Records because it was way cheaper.
Yeah.
So Matador brought it to the show, so I put on this TNA shirt. So there's a show of me playing this festival wearing a TNA shirt, which now I would not do.
That is awesome, man.
I would definitely
if anybody has a photo of Damien Abraham.
There's a couple photos because there's one. I also got... completely drenched in soda at that show and got naked. So it was a bunch of really humiliating. It's one of those things where was I more embarrassed in that shirt or buck naked a couple minutes later? I'm going to say probably I'm more embarrassed in that shirt.
What a life. I'd say you were perhaps the wrestling fan with the most interesting career, I have to say.
Well, I think I really lucked out finding, wrestling at the same time that the band started going because it gave me a lot of time to fill on the road, like, you know, listening to you guys. I was just telling you before we went on air that I've listened to every single one of these. So.
Which is astounding.
Except for the ones I'm on. I don't want you to think I'm megalomaniacs out there. So I'm not going out there and listening to myself afterwards, but I've listened to every single one. So yeah, like I've had some pretty fun, lucky experiences and stuff. And, Taylor Wilde was, like, you know, she was, I did an interview where she taught me how to, like, take a back bump, you know, and stuff like that. And so I was like a huge supporter of her at the time. And I thought her, when they brought her in and she beat Karma and it was like this big thing, I thought that was great too. Like TNA had some
TNA
great
was
moments.
Awesome, yeah. Like, especially during this era with or this show even.
Well,
like,
parts of this show. There are parts of this that we'll get to that are, I was like watching it like, oh my God, is this one of those pay-per-views?
There were parts of this show where I was watching and I was like, oh, so that's why Damian chose this show, because this was so bad. He just wanted our comments.
There are a couple segments which are so fucking...
But we'll get to that. We start off now with our first match of the evening, AJ Styles versus Rhino.
Right off the bat it starts in.
Right off the bat. No rundown promo of the show whatsoever.
I was like, did I skip a match? Did I miss? Is the DVD broken?
No. Nope. AJ Styles versus Rhino in a last man standing match. Do you remember this feud?
I kind of do. It was like the whole thing was, this is one of the, this is what I was saying, like these feuds that have happened a million times. Christopher Daniels and AJ Styles were a tag team.
Mm-hmm.
They lost and they had a big split up, and then Rhino went to get involved somehow, and AJ turned on Rhino, and that was the start of this feud. This is one of AJ's heel turns, but like that's the thing. Like Christopher Daniels and AJ Styles, like, you know, it's like, oh, remember that time they feuded? Like, no, not that time. No, not that time. The other time they feuded.
See, because
like,
Daniels himself was a heel.
He was a heel at this point too. Yeah, so it was almost like, I think it was AJ was turned on by Daniels, and then Rhino got involved, and then he turns on. And I'm not trying to be convoluted with that. I think that's all. That's literally what I remember happening at that point. Well, I wish we had Nate Milton here to be our TNA historian.
Maybe hate breeds hate is what we learn in TNA. Okay, well. As many of you are going to assume, I will be handling play-by-play duties on this episode. And I'm doing that based off of John Pollock's notes because this is a last-minute thing. So here goes. Rhino shoulder blocks and attacks to start the match with the momentum as fans cheer for Rhino. And then he delivers wait, no, that can't be right. Does he deliver? This is going to be one of those reviews.
It's okay.
Somebody delivers a plancha to the floor.
Rhino does. Yeah, okay. Rhino at this point, like, he was fat. He is definitely, like, he looks better now than he did at this point.
I assure everybody, I watch these shows. I just don't remember specifically.
John did miss an amazingly slow chase around the ring spot.
Yes.
It's just like, AJ's running deliberately slow so Rhino can catch up. Like, so it looks, you know, competitive at this point.
Styles stops Rhino with a big dropkick and then tries to play the cocky heel. Wooly Urbina and Moody Jack Melendez, the Spanish announcers of TNA, they are cut to reading notes throughout the broadcast. And I wasn't sure what this was about.
I was wondering, are they trying to bury bad edits or bad camera angles? Because they kept cutting back to him. Like, but I think that was because they were part of the LAX angle and the whole thing that they were a heel announce team.
But did they ever mention that? Like
There was a whole thing also when what's his name, Guerrero was involved too. Not the older Guerrero.
Hector
Guerrero and stuff like that. They do not on this show.
Huh.
Like TNA is like one of those things where you have to pay attention. Like it's like trying to jump in to read the Invisibles at the third last book. You know, you're like, wait, what the hell has happened prior to this?
Okay, the crowd is starting to chant back and forth for both men.
Amazing crowd by TNA standards, too.
Yeah, it was really good. But at that time, I thought TNA crowds were pretty good. But compared to today, the Impact Zone crowd was really, really hot. Styles delivers a springboard splash for the first fall at 4:07. In this last man standing match, you have to get a pinfall before they would start counting for 10. Which I guess is that different from most last man standing matches
I
would see?
I thought it was just a standing 10 count. Like I thought you just go start the count to the ref, but maybe it is a
in the video count. Games you just
you start the pin count.
They start counting just without a pinfall. And then Styles after this, so Rhino gets back up before the count of 10. Styles then delivers a huge swanton over the top to the floor onto Rhino, and John notes in his notes, as did I, as a heel, the offense from AJ Styles did not necessarily warrant a heel reaction.
I hear that, but I think like you can do that stuff and get, like, he was doing it towards the end of his heel run when he was with Ric Flair, as long as you're super cocky and don't do too many of those types of moves, you can. Right. I think you can still make it work as a heel, but yeah, not here.
Not here. I certainly didn't.
Watching this like poor little dude be chased around with this giant fat beast.
Yeah, it's
like, which one am I supposed to think's the bad guy?
And plus, the guy's doing like these beautiful, spectacular moves. I mean, I was always a fan of maybe what some of the high flyers would do when they turned heel is they would tease doing a lot of these moves and then take it away from the crowd.
Yeah.
But AJ, I guess, did not abide by that philosophy. So we go over to Don West. Don West had his headset cut out at one point, and he apologizes. What were your thoughts on Don West as a color commentator?
I was going to say this announced team until about halfway through this pay-per-view, they always made you think about, you know, even when they went to talk about other things that had nothing to do with the match. Like, at least it was always about the wrestlers being good. Like, you walk away, you don't care about Tanae and West and about how they get along with each other. They are just talking about the wrestling, and that it makes you think it's like more important, each of the moves. Like, and so maybe this speaks for how badly it is now in both TNA and WWE with the announced teams they have. But like, oh, at this point, I was like, "Yeah, this is a pretty good announce team."
I certainly agree with that sentiment that this team definitely put a lot of focus. I'm not the biggest Don West fan, even though
I will take him over Taz.
Well, you have an autograph on a bag for
that's
him,
true. So. I should full disclosure. I actually have two.
You got two.
Well, I went to that TNA house show, and those things were like $5.
I want one.
I will give you one of my Don West autograph
bags.
Do I give you the beige one or the black one with silver pen? Oh,
yeah,
my gosh.
Whichever you're willing to part with. But for me, like, Don West, he's not my preferred color commentator, even though I do agree that many aspects of his stuff was good, and I prefer
And it's also, once again, like, compared to now.
Yeah.
You know, like, just Michael Cole, like, and even like Nigel McGuinness is getting really good, but like Nigel McGuinness calls all the moves, and which makes him feel bigger, and like Don West was not able to do that.
Yes.
But what he does do is he does sell. Like,
but for me, it almost became too much. Like, he comes from a QVC background, and that was very apparent.
It's the hard sell the whole time.
He sounds like an infomercial host or a car salesman the entire time, to the point where, like, everything just sounded fake, and I can't really buy what he's saying. Compare that to, like, you know, some of my favorite color commentators, like a Jesse or a JBL.
Yeah. Yeah, like, well, yeah, I think there's like a magic. But the one thing is that they never took away from the product because they are not very interesting people. You know, everyone's like,
that's the key.
Wow, this is Jesse the Body Ventura talking, or this is, you know, John Bradshaw Layfield talking, or Nigel McGuinness talking. Yeah, like, like, this is a guy that worked at QVC. and the professor.
Rhino continues the match with a high spy buster for the pin at 7:55, but Styles gets up now before the count of 10. To the top rope they go, and Styles gets a sunset flip powerbomb and a 2 count. Rhino grabs a table from under the ring. Don West talks about the thin line between love and hate when it comes to Styles turning, and that is was certainly apparent with the crowd reaction.
Yeah.
Styles with the springboard shoulder block and a 2, and then back with a Pele kick a few minutes later. Then he misses a discus clothesline, and Rhino, with the gore, sets him up for another, hits it.
It's amazing, that gore.
Great sell from AJ.
Oh, AJ takes that bump better than anyone.
Yeah.
Like, he just like, looks like he got hit by a car.
Doing a complete full rotation, 360.
But not in like a way that looks like he's doing a flip. Like, he looks like he's actually been like hit with that much momentum to send him that flying.
Look like a car accident, basically. And he pins, and Rhino pins AJ at 13:50 in the match. And at this point, AJ teases getting to his feet before the 10 count, but at the last second, mouths, screw you.
Screw you,
He says, screw you to Rhino, and then sits back down to avoid Rhino, and the match ends at 14:46. Your thoughts on the finish?
I it was, you know, obviously they're continuing the feud, I think, which is what they did, based on the post-match stuff. You know, like, it's a cool way to take that ending away, because that is a fairly definitive win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you beat someone in a last man standing match, that should be the blow off to the feud. So at least it's AJ. But also, like, you know, like, why would Rhino go for it if he wanted to make him suffer at any point in this match?
Rhino what?
Because when the Rhino comes back, they're like, Rhino was cheated from his win. He wanted to make AJ suffer. And it's like, well, if you want to make him suffer, he should be grabbing him every time.
That's true.
That he gets close to the 10 count and picking him up and beating him up again.
That is true. Well, maybe he wanted the match to continue. But yeah, I digress. Obviously, a finish not ideal for a pay-per-view. But yeah, I agree with you. It's not like it didn't make sense. It's
no, and it was like a long 20-minute opening match. Which might have not done a lot of favors for stuff that comes later in the card.
Yes, yes. After the match, Rhino says yes. He Rhino picks up the mic, says, AJ, I'm not done with you. You haven't suffered yet. So he goes back to the back, chases AJ back out onto the ramp, pile drives AJ onto the ramp. Then he sets up a table vertically hanging on that TNA ramp. As AJ is about to stand up in front of it, Rhino goes to gore him, but AJ comes to, drop toe holds him into the table through the ramp.
Which I love that spot.
Great looking spot.
It's a cool spot.
I kind of miss that TNA entrance ramp with the big circle.
Me too. And also because it was a downward ramp, so you have the thought that the guy's falling down on the other side.
And I think it came from both ends, didn't it?
Yeah, they did. They had a heel entrance and then a face entrance.
Oh, is that right?
I don't know if that was at this point, but at one point that's where they were kind of like, they would have like a heel entrance and a face entrance, which is kind of like a neat way to do it. I've never been in the Impact Zone. You've been in the Impact
Zone.
And stuff. So I don't know how believable that is that they have two opposite dressing rooms.
I went last year before, after they had that. Okay. But
at this point, they're still doing the six sides. And I think in this match, and especially this next match, I like that six sides. Like I know people were like, oh, it's cheesy, blah, blah, blah. But it really made it seem like a different show.
Yeah.
Like a different type of show. And I think that's what they need to do.
For the X Division, it made a big difference.
Huge in this next match.
In this next match, we go then with Daniels versus Sabin versus Lynn. A match presented as the past, the present, and the future of the X Division all facing each other.
But also, haven't all these guys been wrestling in TNA since the beginning?
Yes, but I suppose they mean in terms of, how long he's just been in the business.
Because also Daniels has been around, because he's in Beyond the Mat, in the background.
Yes, he was. But I suppose they mean, in terms of public
awareness.
I thought it was a good gimmick to try to sell this
match. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, I think all three of these guys were kind of, Jerry Lynn obviously is much older, but he could still go.
43 at this point.
Yeah, he can still go like crazy.
Meaning he's 48 right now.
And still going.
And still going. Which is amazing.
In that last match, people always talk about how much Ric Flair has aged.
Mm-hmm.
Earl Hebner. Watching him in that opening match, seeing him, he looks trim. He looks like Flair did in the late 90s.
Really?
I
think I'm conditioned to just not notice the referees.
Yeah. this guy is impossible. I forget who the referee's name, but he's the one who used to wear the long
muscular guy?
Yeah, long basketball shorts and
Slick Johnson.
Slick Johnson. And he was the one, wasn't Mike Chioda done for steroids and or wellness policy?
Was he?
Yeah.
Mike Chioda? I didn't hear about that story.
Wow, yeah, I would have thought it was Slick Johnson.
Okay, so anyway, we start off with an interview with Jerry Lynn backstage with Lauren. Letitia Klein. Letitia Klein, as I'm reading John Pollock's notes. There must have been another blonde named Lauren. Somebody.
I don't know, because it's Christy Hemme, who also has the amazing moment, and SoCal Val.
Yes. Okay.
And this person who I don't remember too much, and I wonder why.
Letitia Klein. Letitia Klein is asking all these questions about Jerry Lynn. You're the veteran of this, and Jerry Lynn is taking offense to all these questions because he thinks she's calling him old.
I was ready at this point for them to both take off their clothes and start having sex, because this was like porn acting at its worst. and they both kind of looked at that part,
He certainly has a porn star look.
He does, and she was wearing a black bikini top.
Right.
And nothing else.
Yeah, because Jerry Lynn's got that mustache and that scraggly hair.
Yeah, a little scraggly hair, and he's a little older and weathered looking. And, Val Venus.
The acting was pretty atrocious. Okay, so we go to the match now, and TNA plugs their first ever TNA mobile poll coming on later tonight for Angle versus Joe. We start off the match with a crisscross spot where, and this is where the hexagon ring really comes into play, all three men do a crisscrosses from opposite, or I guess opposing
sides,
axes.
Yeah, and it was awesome.
It was great.
Yeah,
I guess the coordination to be able to pull off something like that, very impressive. Saban with a big advantage over Lin when Daniels is sent to the floor. Daniels comes back in with the Koji clutch on Lin, but Saban uses a springboard boot to Daniels to break it up. Lin with a missile drop kick to both off the top. Daniels with the best moonsault ever to Saban. Then Lin catches the boot of Saban in the corner and power bombs him out, but Daniels makes the save. Lin hits the Emerald Frozen on Daniels, but Saban with the save now. Lin counters Angel's Wings from Daniels and hits the Cradle Piledriver to a huge pop, but Saban rolls up Lin at the last minute and hooks his tights for the victory at 11:43 to win the X Division title.
I thought all these guys were amazing in this match, and like Saban hesitation dropkick is one of the coolest looking moves and stuff, and everything about it was so much fun. There's a guy in the front row wearing a Brace War t-shirt. Brace War is a hardcore band from Virginia.
Oh, there you go.
So I'm not the only one. No, there's a lot of people out there. I know that. But yeah, it was awesome. I really, really, this is like, when people talk about TNA being good, this is what they're thinking about, obviously.
Completely. This was like one of those typical, I would say, X Division style matches, and typical in the best sense of the word, because fast moves, stiff shots, everything executed flawlessly by these three.
Yeah. And they had so many guys on the roster at various points that can do this. And this is like something you put this out and like it gets the crowd happy. If you're watching this on TV, if you're a casual fan, you're flipping by the channels, you see this, you're going to stop.
Yeah.
And you're going to watch it like and there's like no one here doing like, you know, jumping off ladders or anything, just like fast paced good wrestling and yeah, like, you know, they've gotten away from that.
I always felt like this wrestling was the bread and butter of TNA. And I always felt like if this type of this division had the focus that they would give to the main event roster, if they had the star power of the main event roster wrestling this type of match like that, that would have been ideal.
Well, I think just prior to this era, like where you had Samoa Joe working his way through the division and all these guys kind of coming at him, and that was when it was kind of like it was the main event for a little bit there, right?
With AJ and Daniels.
Yes, and Daniels, and those three-way matches against them and stuff like that. And like that is like, yeah, you had so many amazing guys. Homicide, Loki.
Loki Senshi. You know? Most of which were members of the Paparazzi Championship Series, which was
the next segment.
Up next on our show, and explain to the audience, what was the Paparazzi Championship
Series? Well, originally the Paparazzi angle, I believe, starts with Alex Shelley running Paparazzi Productions and filming Sting. And it turns out it's Kevin Nash that had done this. And so that was going to be, that was like a main event angle. And so this, I guess backstage what happened was Kevin Nash just started chilling with all the X Division guys. And they gave him this segment. And you can tell, I hate comedy in wrestling a lot of times because I don't find it very funny. But you could tell these guys were having such a good time
in this first
vignette that you see with this training thing that, I don't know, I love that first segment.
It was a series of competitions that took place backstage, and you can really tell most of this stuff was improvised based off of these guys playing off of Kevin Nash.
Kevin Nash calls, what's his name, Macho Man. He did the Macho Man.
Jay Lethal.
Jay Lethal, sorry. God, I can't really forget that. Anyway, he calls Jay Lethal a cracker.
Wow.
At one point.
There
it's
you
just
go.
Like, it's just like everything about it is just like a really fun. They're laughing at the jokes as they're trying to make them.
So they do things like musical chairs. They do things like a pogo jumping competition. It was very funny, but I do have to say, like, you know, 5 years later, how much did it do for any of these guys?
Well, and also, I'll tell you, someone it did do something for, the WWE. Because when they're watching all these stupid angles, like backstage segments, like that's what they did to all those Nexus guys, too.
Right.
You know that first season of that
NXT,
right? That first season of NXT, they had them do all these ridiculous competitions, and even in some of the later seasons too. I haven't watched it recently.
So the members of the Paparazzi Championship Series, we had Jay Lethal, we had Alex Shelley, we had Senshi, we had Sanjay Dutt, and our finalists of the Paparazzi Championship Series. I guess they won. They had more points than anybody.
All these ridiculous competitions. It ends with a poker tournament.
In the poker tournament. And the finalists, Alex Shelley and Austin Aries wrestling as Austin Starr during his, I guess this would be his first real stint in TNA.
Well, I think, yeah, because didn't he have Starr sideburns at one point, like in that guy in Community? I remember.
I don't recall.
I totally remember that. Maybe I'm just making it up. But yeah, this is like one of his. This is his first
I know.
Run.
I know. He had wrestled a few matches in TNA prior to this, but I remember when he debuted.
Yeah.
As Austin Starr, yeah. He came out with, like, you know, these video packages and everything. And this was sort of like a Jesse the Body Ventura type of gimmick.
And he's amazing. Like, he's amazing now, and he's great with this gimmick, too.
Yes, yes. I thought it was good. Okay, so we go to the finals. Austin Starr versus Alex Shelley, and they are to have a 10-minute match. If the 10 minutes run out, then we go to the judges. And the judges...
this is the problem with this match, is because it's a great... I think it's, like, a really good match. Like, In another scenario, it would be so much better, because when they start bringing out these judges,
as handpicked by Kevin Nash, who joins us for commentary, first, we have Samoan Joe.
Yes. Who, I thought it was, was that Razor Ramon in a mask?
No way. You mean Scott Hall?
Scott Hall in a mask?
Are you kidding me?
I was wondering, like half the size of Scott Hall. Well, you know, Scott Hall does not look the same as he used to, but I guess he's pretty bloated.
Skinny guy in some type of wrestling...
Cobra mask? Or
some type of mask, yeah. He's billed as Samoan Joe. Then we have Big Fat Oily Guy, who, as far as I can tell... was a parody of Big Dick Johnson from the WWE.
But Big Fat Oily Guy, was he later in WWE or?
I'm not sure, because he would come into play afterwards.
Yeah,
in the
they show a clip of him, and I'm like, is that on WWE television? They're showing that, or
no?
That was
TNA footage, but I don't know. I forget if they were saying that the WWE ripped them off, but
yeah,
it can't be. There's no way.
Yeah, well, that's because this guy's been on before. I remember this guy being like a constant thing, and as someone that was a little more heavier overweight than I am now. At that point, I was like, this motherfucker.
You offended?
I was offended, you know? Like, I was like, I finally have my Mexican gardeners. No, I'm joking. It's not at all the same thing, obviously. But no, I was offended. I was like, this big fat, and they keep showing him eating and, like,
we don't do that. We don't eat.
I will tell you, I know a lot of other fat people. I've never met a fat dude that's like, yo, I'm going to oil up. There's one thing that needs some definition to these folds, you know? No, you stay as dry as you possibly can. Baby powder is what us fat guys love.
Baby powder.
You know, wow. If he'd been pouring baby powder on himself, I'd buy it.
All right. Well, we have Big Fat Oily Guy who, you know, exactly like you imagined, comes out greased up in a banana hammock, eating chips. And our final judge, Bob Backlund.
Yes.
Bob Backlund himself, Mr. Bob Backlund, who has made a reference to many times throughout the Paparazzi Championship Series. And here he is, pretty much playing the same Bob Backlund gimmick that we've seen throughout the 90s, you know, the crazy old, basically.
Yeah, the last run he had where, yeah, he's insane.
Yes. Okay, so the match itself, Austin Starr versus Alex Shelley. Here we go. Tanea says that these are like two children fighting for the attention of their dad. And I guess that was certainly... It certainly felt that way, didn't it? Tanae puts over Bob Backlund's WWWF lineage and losing the title to Kevin Nash. Nash exaggerates, says 39,000 people were in attendance when he beat Bob Backlund in an hour-long joke. Then he makes a sex joke about matching He makes some type of sex joke. Austin Starr begins the match with the back elbow off the turnbuckle. Shelley runs at Starr and pulls the ropes down, and Shelley drops to the floor, and then Shelley drops to the floor, and then Aries delivers a corkscrew plancha to Shelley on the floor. Shelley with a knee off the top to Starr, draped through the ropes, and follows up with a suicide dive, a backcracker by Shelley out of the ropes, and then a DDT over the top. The match ends when Shelley applies a camel clutch choke. The match ends when Aries applies a camel clutch, and the ten minutes are run out. Nobody taps, and so we go to the judges. First, we have Samoan Joe awarding the match to Austin Starr. Big Fat Oily Guy gives it to Shelley, so we have a split decision. Bob Backlund comes down to the ring to explain his tie-breaking vote. I don't know what he says. What does he say?
He just goes on this insane rant about awarding them different points for, what I could imagine would be like bodybuilding category, like personal hygiene and things like that.
He says Star gets a 92 and Shelly gets a 95 for conditioning. The ability to procure takedowns yeah. properly. He gives Star an 82 and Shelly a 95. Body positions. Star gets a 90, Shelly an 85. At this point, I was completely lost. In the end, he awards the match a draw. And so, you know, I guess it was supposed to be funny, but I just found it more confusing. Yeah,
these guys have just worked like crazy in that ring, and then to have this be the, you know, like, you didn't need this part.
And that's really the tone I found, like, even with Nash on commentary, too.
No, he did not need, they talked so much about WWE, I thought I was watching WWE programming at one point.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's, yeah. But also just how the whole air of this tournament is like, what are these guys fighting for? They're fighting for a bowling
statue.
A bowling trophy, right? Yeah. And these are guys that are, like, killing themselves out there. They should be in real angles, like Daniels, you know. We get a tie. Nash comes in, says there must be a winner. There is going to be a 5-minute sudden death overtime. And immediately, the two of them go into near fall attempts. Shelly counters a brainbuster, ties Aries up for the pin at about 20 seconds in. So Shelly wins the bowling trophy. Jay Lethal and Sanjay Dutt come in to congratulate them along with Senshi. And Austin Starr is visibly pissed.
Not as pissed as Senshi looks.
Not as pissed as
Loki looks so bummed having to walk into the ring.
He always looks that way, doesn't he?
Yeah.
But especially,
probably having like to do this.
Yep. Star is angry and he yells at Nash. Nash shoves him down. Star is upset and he says he didn't come to TNA to play Pogo and resurrect Nash's career. The only person he respects in this ring is Senshi. And he asks Senshi to leave with him, but Senshi won't. And Senshi instead... Austin
does an amazing impression of Senshi.
He does Senshi's voice.
He comes back and says, maybe I should speak to you in warrior tone, and then goes into an incredible impression of Senshi.
You could do it. You could do it.
Hey, you're like, okay, come on, Senshi, let's go. Like the way Loki talks, like, hey, let's go, come on out, let's get out of here.
I've actually heard him talk in person, like back in Wrestle Reunion in Miami. We, Pollock and I took an elevator with Loki, and he talks that way.
Well, there was, I think he was on, Cole Cabana's podcast, or he was on some podcast,
yes.
That interview with him, where he's talking about him and Homicide meeting for the first time and having like a wrestling match, but it sounds more like a shoot fight, and it's just like his voice is so over the top. I'm like.
Well, in fact, in that interview, I think he mentioned that he was trying to get some voice acting work.
Yeah. He'd be amazing. Like, what was the bad guy in Powerpuff Girls? God, or the bad guy in the Powerpuff Girls. The monkey with the brain in the
I don't
thing.
Remember.
Remember that? But anyway, that he would be good with that guy's voice.
Yeah, he would be. Austin Starr delivers a wicked discus slap.
Yeah.
If you could call it that, to Senshi. Then Senshi and Starr go at it. Eventually, Starr runs out of the ring, shoves Backlund, pie faces Backlund in the face on the outside. And then Backlund delivers a crossface chicken wing to Starr as we go to black. So, you know, Austin Starr, I thought he was very talented. And he still is very talented. But for whatever reason, was not successful in this run.
No. And then he goes to, I think after this he goes back to Ring of Honor, or does he go to WWE? And
I think he went to Ring of Honor. I don't know. Did he try out?
He was going to be on NXT.
Really?
Or no, Tough Enough. Wasn't it Tough Enough?
He tried out for Tough Enough.
Yeah,
yes,
and then he
yes.
was going to leave wrestling. And then, and I think, you know, he came back, and right now he is the only.
Oh, absolutely.
Fresh thing on TNA. Bully Ray, obviously, but.
But yeah, those two, really. I mean, but what a comeback that guy has had over the past year.
If the rumors are true and WWE is starting this junior division in that first hour of the 3-hour Raw, like, they should snap him up because if they were doing a junior division, he's the type of guy that could lead as a heel.
Like, they should, but I, like, just knowing their track record with smaller guys, I wouldn't risk it if I was Austin Starr. I think he's in a great place in TNA right now with a good focus on a lot of TV time every week.
Yeah, that's true.
But Austin Starr, I mean, also, I felt like at this point in time in the X Division, he didn't really stand out. You had so many great guys in the X Division. Compared to today, mm-hmm. a lot of guys have kind of there's not even really an X Division today.
It's gone. It's like, who even has the belt at this point?
Austin Aries.
Austin Aries has it, yeah.
When was the last time he defended?
No, because it's like now just a prop because he's the main event guy.
There you go. It's like, so there's Austin Aries. There's like always a rotating roster of guys that you might see once a month.
Yeah.
Like Azeema Ion or
Kid
Cash or...
I remember that first Monday that TNA had, like, and it was like they were going to be, Hulk Hogan had come out and been like, there's going to be a refocus on the X Division, brother.
Yeah.
And Eric Bischoff was like, we love X Division. That's why we want to get involved. And you watch that first X Division Battle Royale, and it's like everything goes wrong. Mm-hmm. And then you see Jeff Hardy come out of the crowd, and you're like, oh, goodbye, X Division.
Pretty much.
This is the end of it.
Pretty much. Oh, you mean that thing with the cage?
The cage, yeah, and Homicide couldn't get out.
Yeah, couldn't get out.
It was like, why would you do that? Like that
on live TV.
On live TV, and that's the last thing the X Division needs is like, you don't need that spot for the X Division. You don't need a cage. You need those guys flying over the top of the ropes, unless they're doing spots off the top of the cage.
We're talking about like Bischoff and Hogan. How many X Division matches do you think they've even seen?
Oh, right? None.
Okay, so. Our next segment is AMW and the breakup of AMW. We get a recap of that whole breakup between James Storm and Chris Harris. Storm was pissed at Harris for the team losing to LAX, and then turns on him at one point with a beer bottle breaking it onto his eye.
Yeah,
this resulted in some eye injury on Chris Harris, which meant that he was out of action at this time. This is actually just like the beer money turn.
Yeah, exactly.
It?
Yeah. And I think this is I'm trying to remember if at this point this is like the last time you see Chris Harris. Like this is when he leaves.
I don't remember.
Cuz I kind of think after this like you know they keep him. This is when James Storm starts his solo run until he hooks up with the beer money thing.
Mm-hmm. You could be right. I'm pretty sure like Chris Harris must come back with Gale, right? Like don't they do like a series with Storm and Jackie versus
Gale? They do. Yeah, you're right. Sorry.
Okay. But this was towards probably the end of Chris Harris's run.
Yeah.
Gale Kim, of course, is the manager for America's Most Wanted, and she is reluctant to join Jane Storm in his crusade as a heel. So she's playing reluctant manager right now. And they give some type of reason saying that she's basically forced to
yeah,
manage.
Yeah, like he's forcing her, but they never really say why
right.
she's being forced.
Also,
in the package they detail part of the feud that led to the Mexican-American – it was this LAX feud that they had with and the way that the whole feud stems, like the reason they're so angry is because the Mexican national anthem and the Mexican flag were raised in the impact zone.
Mm.
It's like, whoa, that is awesomely racist. That is incredible that you're that xenophobic that you can't even hear this song. It's like horrible.
The baby faces.
That's the baby faces. Yeah. Like, and also LAX, like I'll talk about it later on when we get to their match, but I'm like, oh, am I supposed to hate these guys?
Yes, you are.
I know.
Because they're not white.
I know.
They're not American. Okay. So we go to the match now.
And Petey Williams is America's protector, who's risen to the challenge to defend America.
A
Canadian. Yeah, like a guy from Windsor.
The match itself, yes, is James Storm versus Petey Williams. Williams helped America's Most Wanted against LAX, even though he is a Canadian.
Yeah.
Did he?
Yeah, that's what they say in there. But they also then say, Petey Williams, America's protector. It's like, whoa, that does not speak very well for America.
The guy with the Canadian destroyer.
Yeah.
Helping.
It's the best finisher, though. I would want him to be my protector for
that
finisher.
Totally. Okay. Storm is sent to the floor at first with a dropkick, but he sends Williams chest first into the apron during a plancha attempt. And they play up Gail Kim not having a lot of options because there's currently no women's division in TNA.
I guess that was the case at this point, you know.
Karma wasn't,
It was
Awesome Kong wasn't there.
It was pre Awesome Kong and pre the Beautiful People and stuff like that. So yeah, this must have been because I think they had a women's division beforehand, didn't they? Or never? No, I guess not.
Oh. I mean, I look at this and I just see like Gail, very miscast.
Oh yeah,
as a manager here,
yeah,
you know, somebody who can outwork a lot of the men in on the roster. Here, just playing another typical kind of damsel in distress type of role. Williams back comes back with a spinning heel kick, and then a side Russian leg sweep, and he calls for the Canadian destroyer, but is stopped by James Storm with an inverted DDT. Storm misses a super kick and then goes for the catatonic, but it's blocked, and Williams goes for the destroyer, but Storm rolls him up and uses the ropes for the win at 6:43 for the victory. Afterwards, Williams complains, and the referee asks Gale what happened, but Storm attacks Williams, and Storm grabs handcuffs from Kim, and he cuffs Petey Williams to the turnbuckle as Storm brings a beer bottle into the ring. He's about to smash it into Petey's face, but Gale stops him. Storm then grabs Gale by the throat, and Kim low blows James Storm and starts beating the shit out of James Storm with clubbing forearms. Kim is about to grab the beer bottle herself, and she is about to smash it onto James Storm. But out comes Miss Jacqueline, making her TNA. I don't know if this was her second stint or what, but basically making a debut-ish
yeah.
to TNA as a surprise, teaming up with James Storm to attack Gail Kim. And Storm and Jacqueline hit the death sentence on Gail Kim.
Yeah, which I thought was kind of a cool spot to set up.
Yeah,
that sort of feud, but. But also, once again, just like, yeah, you're right. Gail Kim completely miscast as this sort of typical WWE diva.
I was very perplexed why Jackie was there. Like, yeah. What connection is there to for her with these America's Most or James Storm?
I think a lot of times with TNA, especially at this point, it was just assumed that if you got cut from WWE, you just signed a TNA. Like, and I think that stopped with Carlito. I think Carlito was the person that everyone's waiting for. His debut at the Impact Zone, and then he just never showed up. And there's been a bunch since then that haven't signed. But there was for a while there, it's just like you're just waiting. You're like, oh, they're off TV. Okay, it'll be 5 minutes before they turn up on here.
Right. What did you think of James Storm at this point in time? Did you see him as a potential main eventer or champion?
No. I always thought Chris Harris was like going to be the breakout star from that tag team. I thought he was a good mid card heel, but yeah, he's gotten a lot better. Like. Obviously now in Beer Money he was phenomenal and I liked he should have won obviously the pay per view but I liked how they built him up and stuff.
I agree with you. I didn't really see it in James Storm myself either. I mean, he was always able to deliver promos well, but
yeah.
Like I don't think it was as like at this point. He was still just very much a cowboy character, and he still is, but a lot of his promos these days, I find him a lot more universal. Like, anybody can get behind this guy who's just, wants to kick ass, right? Like, kind of like Austin.
And he was kind of baby-faced at this point to be playing, like, a weather-beaten cowboy, like, unlike now where he's a little older and a little more,
You mean baby-faced as in young-looking?
Not baby-faced as in good guy. But, I mean, like, because it's, yeah, like, with Austin, like, that wouldn't have worked when he was Austin Idol. Right?
With the blonde hair.
When he's older and he shaved the head, like it works. Yeah. Like it's a 40-plus gimmick.
Yeah, totally. I don't know if he's 40-plus, right? I don't think James Storm is 40.
No, but I'm just saying, like, I think this cowboy gimmick's gonna get better as he gets older. As you kind of grow into that weather-beaten lone cowboy on the range type guy.
Mm-hmm. Our next segment on this show.
This is the best. Like, this is up there with the necrophilia stuff. This
was train wreck.
This is like the best bad segment ever.
This was train wreck TV.
On a pay-per-view.
And the reason why I initially felt Damian Abraham chose this show for us to review. We have the Voodoo Kin Mafia coming out. Voodoo Kin Mafia, VKM.
Yeah.
Those of you. Oh, how clever.
Yeah, exactly.
What are some words we can fit to fit this acronym? Voodoo, kin, is that a word?
Yeah.
Mafia.
And this whole gimmick was just like an acknowledgement of WWE and like a small man complex with WWE.
This was
everything about this angle.
This was the New Age Outlaws, Kip James and BG James, as they were known at this point, doing a series of skits about the WWE, very much in the same style as those DX invasion skits.
They actually did a couple invasions.
They did, yeah. So they showed them going to Titan Towers in Stanford. They're kind of mocking the WWE skits with DX. So they would go to things like the live events in Knoxville. At one point, eventually, offering $1 million to Vince if they would allow them to face Michaels and Triple H.
Triple H, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Vince. Vince was stupid not to bite on that. Okay, so I'm doing a terrible job here recapping, but like...
Well, it's impossible to recap because this is like... They have this montage of just clips of these skits, and they're all like... They make no sense out of context. Right. Like they're somewhere... They're in makeup to look like Triple H and Shawn Michaels.
And they do the pose.
And they do the pose, and they're somewhere there... the fat guy's in it again. The fat oily guy, yes. Big fat oily guy's in it, and they this is where they make the accusation that WWE stole that from them.
Right.
And
so basically, the VKM come out to declare victory over Vince McMahon and the WWE because they went to Titan Tower, they found Triple H at a house show, and they looked for Michael Hickenbottom in Texas, and he no-showed. They laid out a charity challenge, and then. They didn't accept, surprisingly.
Yeah.
Vince didn't accept. BG James calls the WWE cowards, and he calls them stupid. And he says that they could have gotten... he says Vince was stupid not to accept the $1 million because, first of all, it's $1 million. Hello, Vince. That's a lot of money. Secondly, it would have been ratings.
Yeah,
imagine like, the ratings.
Vince loses $1 million every day on those dumb movies. Like millions and millions of dollars on those dumb movies. And ratings, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay, so then they start making fun of recently K-Fed appearing on WWE TV and pinning John Cena. He calls Cena a rapping piece of crap. He makes fun of this bunch of celebrity lookalikes having a match on Raw. And this
was that the celebrity lookalikes? Was that when they? No, that wouldn't make sense. Was it when he? Because didn't he have two like presidential?
Yeah. They had Obama and the other guy.
Man, you and me are both.
Oh.
Whoa, we're pickled from the live
McCain,
audio celebration.
McCain. Oh wait, or was it
McCain? It was John McCain.
Or did they have a Sarah Palin?
No, I don't think Sarah Palin.
They didn't have Palin. Okay.
Oh,
anyway.
Did they have Palin versus Hillary? Did they do that?
Oh, maybe it was that. We need John Pollock.
Yeah, we definitely need John Pollock. This has exposed us. Like now, you're seeing the weaker side of the tag team.
whatever it was, the crowd on Raw live eventually started to chant TNA,
yeah.
TNA, TNA, and
which that happened a couple of other times during the show. Which I can't imagine the crowd doing at this point, but like
maybe not at this point. But
but they were doing it during the opening match, and then they did it later on.
Well, it goes to show you, like TNA at that point was like a good alternative,
a viable alternative,
and
yeah.
One that a lot of people seem to like and were proud to talk about and to chant.
Some of us would have even worn a shirt at a concert we were playing.
So yes, BG James basically gets the crowd to chant TNA once again. I thought BG actually did a great job.
He's always been amazing with the crowd. Like
yeah.
I found him super annoying, but like you know, like if nothing else, put him on in a dark match because he fires up the audience. Like they get really behind him and like they love him.
Great on the mic. But what's of course further. The content of this was ultimately pretty lame because it was like a child trying to get the attention, exactly like Tanae said earlier, but a previous match, a child getting the attention of their parents, and the parents just ignoring them.
Yeah.
Where do we go from here?
And then we have It Gets Worse.
It gets worse because BG James does a rally cry. Christy Hemme comes out.
Out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere, she's coming out and she's crying. This is Christy Hemme acting.
Yeah, screaming. Like her, she comes out at a 10.
She comes out at a 10. I guess we remember recently those Kelly skits where she was forced to act upset during her matches.
Yeah.
Whatever that was, this was 10 times worse because, oh my God.
She's so mad. And then she launches into this diatribe that really, like, obviously she raises, like, some legitimate issues about female role in professional wrestling. But in the worst way, like, just, like, the most insane way possible that makes no sense. And then are you supposed to cheer at this point for Billy Gunn telling her to shut up?
I don't know.
Like, because that's what the audience does.
Let's slow down.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Here's what happened, okay. Christy Hemme comes out. She is crying, and we don't know why she's crying, but she's hysterical. Like mascara nearly dripping from her face. Why is she crying at the sight of this rally cry from the New Age Outlaws? She gives her reason. She says,
"What about Joni?
What about Joni? What about China? What about Joni Lauer? This is the reason why Christy Hemme was driven near tears. This was just terrible, terrible overacting." She says, yeah, she goes on to say, man, what about Lita? What about all the women? We're not disposable. We deserve, just as much credit for, trying to champion women's rights in a segment that had nothing to do with it.
And then she says she wants to wrestle. I want to wrestle because the crowd starts chanting, we want wrestling and this is boring. And she goes, I want wrestling too. I want to be a wrestler.
Crowd just turns on her. Turns on. If there was a time to chant WWE at a TNA show, it probably would have been this. And I don't know if this was an audible called by Billy Gunn or if this was planned the whole time, but Billy picks up the mic, calls her a slut.
Yeah.
Segment just keeps getting better and better.
And then goes back to the strip club you got fired from, I think.
Yes, he does. Yeah, tells her to go back to the strip club. And then he also says that girls are good for two things.
Yeah. It's sucking, and then he gets cut off.
Sucking. So, a bunch of classic acting.
Doesn't he also do the DX chop when he says sucking, and then he does the DX?
Yeah, basically sucking dick, and somehow that's two things. Okay.
And then she says, we are good at two things. We're good at something and putting men back in their place. And then there's the worst work slap. Like, the complete counter side of the coin to the Austin Aries discus slap to Loki earlier.
I felt like, like you said, I mean, you used to take women's studies in school. I mean, the content of her thing was fine, but to push it in a context like this, it was almost making her a heel.
It made her a heel. It did make her a heel. And, like, it makes, even though she's saying – and this is one of those weird things with wrestling. There's always a couple angles every once in a while where I'm like, well, am I supposed to be booing for this person? Because what they're saying actually kind of makes sense. And, like, someone obviously writing the dialogue is getting – like Muhammad Hassan, the stuff about Islamophobia, I'm like, well, that's kind of right on. Like, especially at that time, I'm like, is somebody backstage, like, getting this? And then they're just like, well, that's the bad guy then. He can say that, but that's got to be the bad guy. Because I'm like, oh, I kind of agree with that. And even Christy Emmy here, I'm sure women's plight, like, she even mentioned, she's like, Lita went running from this business screaming because it was so bad. And it was just true. Like, I can only imagine how, like, hearing how terrible it is for male wrestlers, I can only imagine how rough it is for female wrestlers. But at the same time, this is not the way to get that message across.
No, and not with her.
Not with her. And not have her be like, I want to wrestle too one time.
Oh my God.
And it's like, the one thing I was wondering watching this is there's a couple segments where you're like, did they just have someone not show up? Like, do they have two guys, like, no show the pay-per-view? It's like Jeff Hardy was supposed to be there, and he's supposed to be wrestling, like, Vampiro or Raven. Like, just two guys that never show up, and they're like, shit.
Well, Hardy, I don't think, was a part of this.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, like, there's, like, why do they have so much filler on a pay-per-view?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, because I don't know if that was the case, because, like, the last match on this show, it seemed like it was really rushed.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this segment went over or what. But Don West eventually sums up by saying, oh, this got bizarre. And it certainly was.
Yeah.
If there was one segment worth watching just for, sadistic purposes, it would be this one.
Well, and this is, I don't know for sure Vince Russo wrote this, but this is like, this is Vince Russo writing all over it.
Dude, he was part of those DX skits earlier, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true, yeah. And so it's like, this is where you see, especially leading into this next match, this is like two matches from now, but like this is like the end of the old era of TNA.
Mm-hmm. On to the next segment, and our next feud is between Team 3D and LAX. We get an interview with Jeremy Borash talking to Team 3D, a very big-looking D-Von.
Mm-hmm.
Chest out.
Huge.
Oiled up.
Putski.
Yeah. Oh, Putski. Are you naming a Scott Putski Award winner?
I'm saying that I don't want to believe it, but I'm thinking that if someone's drinking from the Scott Putski cup, It might be my friend Devon on this
there
one.
There we go. Devon Dudley, Scott Putzke, winner for Final Resolution 2007.
There's not too many other huge guys on this show. Like, TNA had a pretty thin, well, when I say thin, I mean, yep, like lean roster at this point.
Most of the matches, almost every match on the show consisted of an X Division talent. And that was another thing that made the company stand out, was that, you know, a very high work rate, a smaller roster, but a roster that was much more realistic and would, you know, work much harder.
Yeah, like, and one thing, you know, obviously not all the stories were good, but at least every single match here has a story. Like, there's WWE now and TNA now put out matches on the pay-per-views that have nothing going into it, so you don't care at all.
Totally. Okay, so Bubba, in contrast, though, did not look as in shape.
No.
Not as Devon, and not even compared to Bubba today.
Yeah.
Bubba basically delivers a promo saying that this is the match for the people that the people have been dying to see. They say that they've beaten every team in TNA with the exception of LAX. LAX, in their part, took out Brother Ranta, who is formerly Spike Dudley, and 3D took out Conan in the buildup of this feud. And Team 3D says they are jealous of LAX because... Oh, wait. They say that LAX are jealous of them because somebody's jealous of somebody because they want the titles, basically. Sting comes in shortly after this promo, and he says he's just looking for Abyss in a bit of a throwaway segment. But we go to the match. We go to the match itself. Booty Jack.
I loved LAX at this point, too. I thought they were a cool faction.
Yeah.
And I think Conan is awesome. And actually, their Titan Toronto... Well, you want to talk about the introduction now? Because he does the...
No, you could talk about
okay,
it.
Okay, yeah, well, they basically, the announcer, which announcer is it that actually gets up? Rudy Jack gets up and...
Moody
Jack, sorry, gets up and has, and cuts a promo that ends with, like, killing gringos, which I think is, like, it's so awesome. And they have this, their Titantron video is, like, wicked.
Like, Che Guevara.
It's all, like, you know, union activists and migrant workers and things like that. And last night, I was, you know, because I've watched this a couple times, so I was rewatching it, and I wrote to Conan on Twitter, which is why I love Twitter, and I'm like, who came up with the idea for that Titantron thing? Because it's so awesome. Like, all the political stuff. He's like, oh, that was my idea.
That's awesome.
I came with all the content for that.
Very cool. The power of Twitter.
I know. The power of Twitter. It's the first wrestler who's ever written me back on Twitter. Actually, that's not true. Cassius Ohno writes me back.
Cassius, nice.
But like, yeah, like everyone else, I'm like screaming at a wall normally. But Conan hit me back within, like,
there
6 hours.
That's some fine research, Damien.
There you go.
Okay, so...
John Pollock, right here.
Eat your heart out,
yeah,
John.
Get ready, John. I'm coming for your spot.
I do have to say, like, comparing this to Mexican America, there's no comparison.
No comparison.
LAX were an actual intimidating, serious tag team.
Well, Homicide, like, for a little guy, he always has been, like, the guy that I'm like, he's crazy. Like,
yeah.
The stuff he does is real nuts.
He was always, like, to me, a perfect example of how size shouldn't hinder your ability because he walked around like he was 7 feet tall.
And I don't know what it is with Hernandez, but I love him at this point. I thought he was, like, for I'm not a big man wrestler fan, but, like, I thought he was a perfect big guy. And you had him, you had Homicide, and then you had Conan for the mic. And Conan's, like, amazing on the mic.
I thought the team of Hernandez and Homicide were a perfect combination. You had the small guy who's the brains.
And the psycho.
And the big... and then you have the big guy who's the muscle.
Yeah.
So, I thought they were a wicked team. Just even thinking about all the Mexican or Latino... I guess, factions that we've seen in WWE or TNA. Like, perhaps LAX would be my favorite.
Me too. Because it's also, like, you watch it, and once again, like, this is when I was talking about liking heels. You know, some of the stuff they were saying prior to that, like, about the treatment of Hispanics in America is right on. Mm-hmm. You know, pretty right on, like, I imagine, like, you know, from their perspective and stuff. So, you know, and I think that makes a much more believable heel faction when they have a good gripe, you know, and a reason for them to be angry. It's not like... We're gardeners driving around on lawnmowers, you know, or guys riding around
on
lowriders.
We're cool. We're Mexicools.
Yeah, like it just, like this was a faction that actually had some weight behind it.
Yes. People with actual thoughts, not just what maybe an American thinks, you know, these people.
A very rich American who lives in Connecticut.
Exactly.
Thinks of Mexican people.
All right, so the match starts, and Bubba brawls on the floor with Homicide. Bubba starts getting starts bleeding hard way on the forehead. They get heat on Devon in their corner, and LAX hits a double, or sorry, and the Dudleys hit a double clothesline onto LAX. Hernandez misses a splash in the corner, and he takes a shoulder block for a two count. The Dudleys deliver the what's up to Hernandez, and then they call for the tables, but then 3D, but then they deliver the 3D to Homicide as he runs in, but Homicide is not the legal man. Hernandez is then sent to the floor. Brother Runt, who at also at this point was working some type of alcoholic gimmick.
Yeah, drunk gimmick. It's drunk Santa Claus gimmick.
Yeah, he comes and dressed out as
well, you know what? It was because we've got to remember who we're talking about here, and this is right around the time Bad Santa came out. You know?
So what? That was the reason why?
I'm sure of it. Like, knowing Vince Russo and, you know, loving movies. You know, okay. Like, let's not forget The Green Hornet. Loving movies that not necessarily a lot of people have seen.
Well, what month did this movie come out? This pay-per-view.
February 2007.
And a Christmas
Well, I think they kept him over. They held him over in the suit. Yeah. Okay. No, it's TNA, but I'm sure that's like... Because he kind of does look like Bad Santa.
Billy Bob Thornton.
You know, like, yeah. In the face. You don't see that a little bit, Brother Runt?
Not really. He's like half the size of Billy Bob Thornton almost. Anyway, Brother
Runt. Yeah, I don't mean like physically. I'm just racist. I think all white people look the same.
Yes, I think so. Brother Runt comes in with the Santa outfit and a flask or a bottle of something. And then Don West asks if he's drunk. Brother Runt climbs to the top, drinks vodka, and falls off the top rope near Homicide. And a DQ is called. This is your finish, folks. Spike Dudley coming in drunk in a Santa outfit, falling on top of Homicide. And we get a DQ at 10:18 of the match. Brother Runt tries to celebrate with 3D, and 3D instead starts attacking Brother Runt.
Yeah.
What do you think of the match?
You know, this could have been awesome, because you have, like, two, like, plunder match, basically, specialists, and they didn't do anything with it. Mm-hmm. Like, really didn't do anything with it. Like, nothing happens. Like, it was a TV angle.
Yeah. There's not much here. I like Brother Bully Ray much more than I did... This type of a...
Earnest baby face that he was. Yeah,
it was just a generic baby face character.
And they kept this going for so long. Like, we are here because we love wrestling, mm-hmm. and you are great opponents, and we want to take you on in this wrestling match. And it's like, yeah, he's much better as a jerk bully.
I think a big part of that was... the Dudleys had tried splitting apart before in the WWE, and that was a big failure. But for some reason, it worked, and worked very well this time, at least for Bully Ray.
Well, I think because also there's always been the rumor that he's not very nice in the locker room and hard to work with, and like they were dreading when he was coming to TNA, apparently, in the locker room. And so I think that is much more believable than this really earnest guy who's like, we go around the world looking for worthy opponents.
Yeah,
you know, like,
way better heel.
Way better heel. Go with what you know, like JBL. Like, that guy is a natural heel.
Because he
seems like a real heelish person off camera.
We get an update on our texting poll in Samoa Joe versus Kurt Angle, and 57% of the audience favor Samoa Joe over Kurt Angle in the rubber match. And
this is like proto-Twitter.
Proto-Twitter. Yes, you this know, was like, before Twitter.
Yeah, they keep bringing it up throughout the match in a kind of annoying way.
Yeah.
Like, oh, Joe looks like he's gaining. Angle looks like he's gaining on Joe.
Do TV shows still do that these days? The text
votes? I can't imagine there's any reason. Well, yeah.
American Idol.
Yeah. I guess like a huge show where you have a segment of the audience that probably isn't tech savvy.
They make a ton of money off of that.
Yeah, yeah. But for most shows now, no. It's like way cheaper just to have a Twitter.
Yeah. Okay, so then we get an interview between Jeremy Borash and Samoa Joe in the locker room. Samoa Joe, was this Samoa Joe? Because I don't recognize him. This man was much skinnier.
Yeah.
He's a main eventer, doesn't have a stupid face tattoo or any stupid gimmick like that. This was the Samoa Joe that I knew and loved.
Yeah. I loved him so much at this point.
Yeah.
I started like really getting into him just when he was coming into TNA, just before he came into TNA. I remember watching him debut and just being like, oh my God, this guy's the best wrestler. He's so good.
Yeah. Well, he came in initially as part of the X Division.
Yeah.
And in the X Division, and going back to his ROH run, to his legendary ROH run, he was always the giant man, the big, you know, fat guy who can run around with the stamina, with the speed, and would do these topes and everything, like all the smaller guys. And he stood out so much because he was in there with all these smaller guys. At this point, he had kind of done his thing in the X Division, was now moving into the main event, and certainly now in the series of matches with Kurt Angle, still with a ton of steam, with a ton of the audience by his side.
Yeah, because he had just lost. He loses to Kurt Angle, right? That's the first time he loses, and that was their first meeting. And then, yeah, they've gone back and forth, and here they are again. Yeah, he just felt like, you know, like this was a and you know, as I kind of said earlier, there's some things you can't go back on. Like, I don't think you can ever rehab Joe to this point ever again, because he was like an untainted. He was such a pure star, you know, like, and it's, you know, you don't have a lot of those, because so much of wrestling, I guess, requires you to pay your dues before you make it to once you're at the big show, you have to pay your dues, right? Yeah. Like Dolph Ziggler, like, I can't imagine WWE having a guy that they bring in, you know, they don't have him job out for like 6 months before they give him a run, like Ryback, like.
Even Brock Lesnar.
Brock
Lesnar.
But even like Ryback, like who, like they've got him on an undefeated streak right now and he's meant to be this, but like that was Skip Sheffield less than a year ago. Doop-a-doo. That was just like.
You're not supposed to know that.
You're not supposed to know that, but like everyone knows it. Like it's like that's not even the standard 3-year waiting period. We're supposed to get 3 years and then we're going to forget about it.
That I don't mind so much though, because like I'm willing to suspend my disbelief if they're willing to push somebody brand new. Like,
well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I want them to push someone brand new. Like, imagine you brought in like a Cassius Ohno. Like, you put him on TV and you have him be dominant. Like, maybe not, like, you don't put him on the main show at first, but you have him on Superstars work. Like, the Goldberg thing. Like, that Goldberg build, no one knew Goldberg. That's why it worked, where you had this guy. Like, this guy could be that domineering. Right. And I think the thing with Joe is the people that did know him knew him from Ring of Honor, where he was completely dominant. And here he is coming into Ring of Honor, or sorry, into TNA, and they bring him in as completely dominant. So the audience is not, like, they're not going to think of him as being this weak character. Whereas now, if you start booking him as dominant again, you're going to be like, ah, he had a face tattoo. He had a knife.
Yeah. We look back at this feud probably quite fondly, but this was also a feud where we saw, first of all, Kurt Angle beat Samoa Joe in the match. And then in order for Kurt Angle beats Samoa Joe, and then Joe beats Kurt Angle in their next match. And in order to get a rematch for the third time, Kurt Angle kidnaps Samoa Joe's girlfriend.
Yeah, and puts her in the ankle lock.
I always remember this one time because Samoa Joe actually came into the Fight Network not long during this build to do an interview with Dan Lebransky. And the moment Joe walks in, Dan just says, "Hey, Joe, how's your girlfriend?" And Joe just, like, he's laughing at this. Like, you know, you could tell the guy thought this was just as stupid as anybody else.
No, and they, like, because you still did have Vince Russo writing it behind the scenes. You still have that. And yeah, like, you don't need that. You didn't need that.
You had a great rivalry, like a great trilogy between
And there should be a third, right? Like, that would be, logically, there should be a third. And if you don't pay attention to the booking, it kind of works.
So we have a 30-minute Iron Man match.
Sorry, and just also, like, once again, rehabbing characters. Kurt Angle came in to TNA off the worst story angle I think you could ever give someone, where he was a rapist. Remember, he was trying to rape Charmel?
I missed much of that.
He was Booker T. He was trying. Charmel's Booker T's wife, right? Uh-huh. And he was taking, like, groping her, getting on top of her, trying to rape her. And that was his.
There we go.
He was stalking her, and that was his last run. So I think it's completely plausible that he would go after Samoa Joe's girlfriend based on that.
Sure. Well, he was later arrested on that thing with Raka Khan.
Oh, yeah.
Domestic abuse charge, so maybe not too far from the truth. Well, anyway, okay, Samoa Joe versus Kurt Angle, 30-minute Iron Man match. Let's get to the result, because the winner they announced would get a title match at the next pay per view. A slow start, setting the pace with both feeling each other out. Angle is thrown to the floor a few times. Joe comes back with the front face lock, but Angle stomps out and attacks the left leg of Joe, and then to a side headlock. Joe gets the advantage as they fight to the floor, and then he sends Angle back in and puts on the Kikina clutch and a submission for the first victory with the first submission win of the match at 13 minutes for the first fall. Angle comes back and gets the ankle lock into a heel hook at 16 minutes, and then ties it up at that point 1-1. The announcers play up both tapping out to preserve themselves for the rest of the match. So yeah, I mean, especially for a guy like Samoa Joe who was undefeated for for so long. Mm-hmm. Kind of unplausible to have him tap so quickly, but I thought the announcers did a good job.
Yeah, exactly, and I think that's a strategy in these mm-hmm. matches, and I'm glad they had that, because you wouldn't fight that. You would submit and be like, okay, especially early on.
Now I get
like,
to rest, right?
I get to rest. Like, there's no point in having this guy destroy my arm.
And it was good of the announcers to mention that to protect both characters. Angle comes back with a rear naked choke with one hook in on the ground. The crowd is back and forth with chants between the two men. Angle gets the ankle lock, and Joe taps again at 18:58. So Angle is up now 2-1. Joe goes for the muscle buster, but Angle rose through for a roll-up, and then he hits the angle slam for a two count. Angle brings the straps down and hooks on the ankle lock, but Joe rolls out, and he counters and hits a muscle buster for the pin at 22:22, coincidentally tying it up the match at 2-2-2.
Yeah.
Kurt Angle then gets a heel hook in the middle of the ring, but Joe gets to his back and kicks out of it. Angle jumps off the top and is caught, and then he is put into a roll-up, and he pins Joe with a roll-up, with just over 5 minutes left, and Angle takes the lead at 3-2. Angle runs into the corner and takes a uranage from Joe, but Angle recovers and drives his left knee into the post twice and then attacks Joe on the floor. Joe takes a slap and then kicks Angle in a seated position on top, and Joe hits the muscle buster, but Angle gets his foot on the ropes. Joe is on his back with ground and pound, but counters the ankle lock and goes for the rear naked choke. But Angle counters, and Joe goes back, working for the back, and applies the ankle lock to Angle in the final 30 seconds of the match. And then he transitions over into a heel hook, and Kurt Angle taps right after time expires. So Angle still wins 3-2.
Yeah, and I thought that was a cool way to have it end. You know, mm-hmm. like both guys still look strong, but you have a definitive winner.
I think it was right to have Kurt Angle go.
Yeah, me too.
He's the guy who just came in. He's the guy with the most value in the company. Joe can certainly afford a loss. And to have Angle tap after the time ran out, you still, push Joe as, if he only had a bit more time.
A bit more time.
It would have been equal,
right? Things had gone slightly differently, he could have won.
So a good match, I thought.
Yeah, I thought a great match.
Yeah.
Like, I think both these... Both these guys, was it 2 weeks ago on TNA? Like, both worked great then, too, mm-hmm. Like, they're just very compatible in their style.
Exactly. They both have almost, like, shoot style type of things, and both very technical, like Samoa Joe mentioned on that Law interview, really the dream matchup of any combination once that Kurt Angle announcement was made.
It's kind of like Kurt Angle would be the one guy that even now I wouldn't mind seeing going to, like, NOAH.
Oh, that would be awesome.
So awesome to see him be able to work with a company where everyone works that way.
Although at this point, I'd be a little concerned how far he would push himself.
Yeah,
that's true. But I'd certainly love to see it. And solid booking from all involved. We go to the back now, and Sting, who is about to wrestle Abyss in our main event, talks to Jeremy Borash.
What's with Borash's outfit, too?
The disco things?
Yeah, like...
That's his look.
It was a rough look.
With the frosted tips and everything.
But I think he dresses better now with that open tie thing, open shirt
thing. He looked like a big geek back then.
He looked like those Devils guys that used to be on Speaker's Corner. Remember those?
Devil's Advocate.
Devil's Advocate. Just like a Devil's Advocate. crossed with James B., the lounge dude. Remember that guy? He was also on Speaker's Corner a lot.
Oh, okay.
He was like a lounge. He was like Canada's Brian Setzer.
I always thought it was so sad that they took away Speaker's Corner at the new Much Music Building.
I know. And you know what else I find really sad? By the time I got there, they had sold City TV, obviously, to Rogers. And
this is going to be a very Canadian media-centric conversation.
And with that, they sold Speaker's Corner, I guess, including the tape library, because every year there's this legendary Christmas party that they would have at the Much Music City TV building.
Uh-huh.
And they would watch the Too Hot for TV Speakers Corners tapes that they would make.
Too Hot for TV, meaning like people... Okay, I know a lot of people are
Speakers
lost.
Corner, yeah. So I should say, Speakers Corner was this box that was like right on the corner of Queen and John in this... The front corner of the City TV Much Music building, a huge TV channel and music, our kind of like our MTV building. And they had this box that you could go in and pay one loonie, which is our Canadian dollar coin for you really out of touch Americans.
Yeah, yeah.
Or international listeners, I should say. And you would put that in the loonie and you would get, was it 5 minutes?
I don't know.
Three minutes?
You got some time.
Yeah, and you would get to say whatever you wanted. And they had a show where they would edit them together and play it, and they'd have some divide into different segments like rants, and they'd have people ranting, and people would rant about everything. People would criticize TV shows, people would make announcements on there, go on there with their kids.
In fact, the Bare Naked Ladies,
that's where they got their start. Yeah,
got their start by appearing on Speaker's Corner. They played that Yoko Ono song. Yeah, that they did, and that's how they got noticed. That's how they eventually got their deal.
And it was like, and you know, anyone could go down there, but anyway, there's also what happens there that you don't see, which is a lot of people going in there doing drugs.
Wow.
A lot of people going in there doing doing sexual acts, all types of sexual, all manner of sexual acts. People peeing onto the cameras, all sorts of stuff. Like people like losing their mind, like saying crazy stuff on them they can't put on TV, like making threats and accusations.
And so at the Christmas party, they would show everything.
Yeah, and I know a lot of TV stations do this because I think CNN did one, because I used to work at a video store in Toronto, and we had a tape of that, of the CNN party tape, which was like, either they had this fashion reporter and you see her doing cocaine on the air, like just really like crazy stuff, and it was like all the CNN footage. So I know stations do these kind of things, and or I think back then they would probably do them a lot more than they do now, because now I think there'd be a real fear of it getting out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like now you'd have it on YouTube.
Yeah, now everybody would be able to see it.
Yeah.
I know they do have a new Speaker's Corner up in where City TV ended up moving up at Yonge.
Oh, really? Okay.
But like that part of town, it's not really as frequent.
And it's also, you don't really need it like you used to. Like now because there's YouTube, you know, like it would be like, for people that didn't see it, it would be like all the crazy videos on YouTube of people talking direct address to their cameras put on TV every Saturday afternoon to watch.
All right, enough for our Toronto audience.
Yeah.
Now we get back to what we're here to talk about, and that's the main event of this.
And Jeremy Borash's wardrobe.
Jeremy Borash's wardrobe. Okay, so Sting is there talking with Jeremy Borash, and he basically says that Sting... Borash asks Sting about Abyss's loyalties, and then he says that Mitchell, who... Explain this storyline to me, because James Mitchell here, the Sinister Minister, he's portraying some type of devil character.
Yeah. Well, the Sinister Minister, who I love, he's one of my favorite non-wrestling sort of components of a wrestling show. But he at this point was Abyss's manager, slash, I think they were trying to play off that he was his dad, too, later on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the whole thing was Sting thought that inside Abyss there was still this really good person that he had to somehow get out. And so it was like the battle for Abyss's mind. And they'd been waged for weeks on end. And I can't really remember how they found, Christian Cage and Tomko in there.
Tyson Tomko, yeah.
Yeah, pre-injecting himself in Denny's days, obviously.
I was completely lost in the storyline because they had let's get to the match.
Yeah.
So Christian here, Sting versus Christian versus Abyss for the TNA World title in a three-way. Christian, this entire time, he is threatening to reveal Abyss's deep, dark secret.
Yeah, that's it. And which I think was that James Mitchell was his dad, right? There's so many convoluted stories.
John Pollock, help us out. But to further confuse me, Tomko here was locked in a cage.
Yeah, which I think, like, this to me, like, you know, is a Memphis thing, right? Like the shark cage.
But why Tomko?
Because he was like the enforcer. He was going to get an interfere on Christian's behalf. Because he was always Christian's bodyguard.
But then why not just ban him from ringside?
Because then you wouldn't be able to have him keep getting involved in the match like they do in this storyline.
Why not lock the Sinister Minister in a cage? Why not lock all their friends in a cage?
Well, I imagine Sinister Minister is not as imposing. Like, you know, it's like, oh, you got to deal with this guy. It's like this fat, bearded dude who's like, eh? Or it's like, or this dude with crazy tribal tattoos all over his body. Who can inject like 350 Oxycontins and still survive.
Right, right.
Cool.
Okay, so Tonko, who is a friend of Christian's, he's stuck in a cage. And then we go to, okay, Abyss. Abyss is on the floor. He crotches Sting on a post as Mitchell instructs Abyss to take his head
off.
Oh,
and also Jim Cornette came out, though, before this to put Thompson Tomko in the cage.
Okay, okay, that's right, that's right.
This is the very end of, I guess, him and Russo backstage.
That's right,
okay,
okay.
Not getting along at this point.
That's right. Abyss is to the floor, and he crouches Sting on a post as Mitchell instructs Abyss to take his head off. Abyss catches Christian on a plancha attempt and drops him on a barricade. Abyss misses Christian, and he runs into a post, takes a bulldog on an entrance ramp. Christian kicks out of the shock treatment from Abyss in the ring, and then Cage attacks the knee of Abyss. Tomko is choking Sting from inside the cage as Abyss hits the black hole slam, but the official is tending to Sting on the outside and he cannot count. Abyss throws the referee into the ring. Cage kicks Abyss, and then Sting is in the ring and he tosses Abyss into the cage. Not the cage.
Maybe that's why they did that. Maybe that's why they had the shark cage.
That is brilliant.
You're Christian Cage. Well, your friend's going to be in a cage.
Here's a Bible. There we go. A Christian in a cage. Oh, Jesus. Pollock would have had fun with this recap. Anyway, Abyss is knocked into Christian Cage, and Christian is knocked out. Wait. Okay. Abyss is knocked into Christian Cage. Christian delivers the inverted DDT,
yeah.
And he pins Abyss. So a surprise there, and that means we get a new champion at the end of this. Abyss is the first to be eliminated. Abyss is upset, and he teases a chokeslam to Sting, but he goes against Mitchell, and he won't do it, and then Mitchell is visibly upset. Christian wears down Sting, and then Sting starts to no-sell in to begin his comeback. A splash in the corner from Sting. He misses a second one, but comes back with a superplex to Christian, but Mitchell comes back out. And Sting gets the Scorpion Deathlock, but James Mitchell attacks the... This is when it becomes, like, way overbooked.
Way overbooked.
Overbooked. So Sting tries to apply the Scorpion Deathlock, but then Mitchell attacks the official with a key. And he unlocks Tomko, and the ref turns his back for Mitchell, and Tomko...
Well, Mitchell distracts him, right? Like, doesn't Mitchell distract the referee?
Okay.
Keep doing that.
Mitchell distracts... Yes. And then Tomko comes into the ring to attack Sting, drops Sting from his shoulders. Christian covers him, but Sting kicks out. Tomko is in again, but Sting fights Tomko off and barely clotheslines him over the top rope. Abyss comes down now, and Abyss attacks Tomko. Then Christian Cage misses the belt shot. Excuse me. And Sting hits the Unprettier onto Cage, who is, you know, stealing his move. But Christian kicks out after a two for a near fall. Cage misses Sting with a clothesline and then takes out the referee. Mitchell then attacks Sting with a cane again, but is caught this time between Sting and Abyss. Sting goes for the Scorpion Deathlock to Mitchell, but Abyss lays out Sting. If you're confused, I'm sorry.
It's even more confusing watching.
Yes. So then Abyss lays out Sting with the chain, and then Christian Cage delivers a frog splash onto the back of Sting and pins Sting for the win at 13:20 in a very, what I thought was a very obviously rushed matchup.
Very much so.
Yeah. 13:20 minutes, Christian Cage becomes your NWA TNA champion.
And I think this is the end of the main event picture, too. This is where you see, like, you know, the matches like Joe or like Christopher Daniels, AJ Styles stuff, or even the Christian Cage stuff with AJ Styles. And it's like now you have, like, these, which is not even about wrestling anymore. It's just about insane, convoluted finishes.
Yeah, I was a very lackluster match, in my opinion, and just... Just way totally overbooked. I was completely lost, especially, you know, not being able to follow the storyline before this either.
And not to weigh in on a law trope, but I think if Sting had fought Undertaker at this point, they would have put on an amazing match.
Absolutely.
You know, like Sting, I think, is another guy that has aged a lot in like 5 years. Mm-hmm. Like he looks, his body does not look the same as it did 5 years ago. And mine doesn't either. It looks way better now. Just kidding.
There we go. And you can see Damian Abraham's body every time you go to a fucked up show.
Yeah, you can see really.
Sometimes completely naked.
I know. It's going to eventually, if I keep losing weight, it's going to get to a point where I'm just bragging. It's not there yet. Still like 200 pounds away from that point.
No. You're getting there, though. You're getting there, though. Okay, overall, what did you think of this show, Damien?
You know what? I kind of remember this being like a really awesome show the first time I saw it, and now in retrospect, I think it's like the definition of a 5 out of 10 because half of it's awesome, like full marks, and then the other half is just completely terrible.
I'd go as far to say, like, I enjoyed most of this match outside of that atrocious Christy Hemme thing.
That promo, though, would be – that is like Botchamania bad. Like, yeah. That is like one of those things where you're like, that's Katie Vick bad.
Totally. I put it on that level.
Yeah, like who was looking at this being like, this is going to work?
Somebody maybe Matthew from Botchamania saw that and was like, this would be great.
Also, you know, everyone talks about wrestling like, you know, it's too scripted these days. It's too scripted. Guys should be going out and cutting their own promos. I could only imagine how much worse this would have been if it hadn't been scripted. Like if you had Christy Hemme going out there and just freestyling it.
Basically, following this, we know why they decided to put Christy Hemme in an announcer's role. Yeah. We're all better for it. What do you rate this show?
I said 5 out of 10.
5 out of 10, that's right. Okay, well, I like to give it a 7 out of 10 because I thought the wrestling overall was really good.
The wrestling was good, but I just think once again, why I picked it, but I think this is like the end of TNA.
Sure, you know, sure. Like,
and I also bought in when it was the Monday Night War, the return of the Monday Night Wars. That was my other time I came back, and I was like, TNA is gonna beat WWE now. It's amazing. And then you watch that first show, and you're
they are on an upswing at the moment.
They've got Dave Lagana. Like you know, like listen to his podcast. You're like, wow, why doesn't someone put him in charge of a product? But then, even seeing him there, you realize that it wasn't just Russo. Like Russo wasn't the only problem. The problem is like just so much with the product has been tainted from like years of mismanagement and just these guys that are tired a lot of them on TV and stuff. Mm-hmm. So you can only write so well with those people.
Yeah. They are going live next week, so we'll see. We'll see. It's a good time to follow TNA, I'd say. I mean, if you haven't been following it for a while, it's definitely a good time to jump on and sample the new flavor of the product.
It's also I kind of think like this will be another moment where are they going to come back and they're going to have a good strong show and make it about the wrestling, or is it going to be the Brooke Hogan hour?
Oh,
or 2 hours, I guess. And also Brooke Hogan, like we're talking 2012, like. Her last hit was like at the time of this pay per view, right? Like,
do you know the hit? No. I don't even know.
It was the one with Paul Wall. Remember she had and small H hit.
Yeah.
We're talking fucked up level hit, like not very.
Oh, you guys are way bigger than than Brooke Hogan.
We're actually probably smaller, but like still, I'm saying like you know, but like that's where.
I don't see Brooke Hogan on the cover of Spin magazine.
Yeah, nor will you ever see me again on the cover of Spin. Probably.
Oh, you're there once at least. Well, come on.
But that's I think going to be you know Thursday night if you're like standing there watching Brooke Hogan, go on there for a couple hours and just you know do what her dad does, which is just. I don't know. Distract.
It could be Christy Hemme level bad.
It could be Christy Hemme level bad. And yeah, like that's the other thing. Like the brief times they've had her involved in angles with her dad.
Yeah,
she sucked. So now she's gonna have a main focus type thing.
Yeah. All right, we go to your feedback now at lawradio.proboards.com, and there is a ton of it this week.
Whoa,
two. We first go to James Starkey. As with every Review Away show, I searched the title of this pay-per-view into Google in order to find a stream. I was stoked to see a YouTube that was 2 hours and 49 minutes long, as multi-part videos are often a huge pain in the balls. And when I clicked on it, it was an official TNA thing. It cost me 99 pence, which is pretty cheap, really. A 3-hour long, decent quality stream. As John said a little while ago, it's convenient, so it's worth paying for it. What a mixed bag of a show. The angles at the time seemed fucking dreadful. And while the wrestling was mostly very good, it's hard to see past the fat road dog calling out Vince McMahon and Billy Gunn calling a crying woman a slut. And you know what? I forgot to mention, but what made that entire segment with the road dog even more, I guess, lame, in hindsight is that this man works for them now.
Yeah.
This man is an agent.
Yeah.
This man is a complete hypocrite.
Yeah.
Begging for a job probably at some point after doing all this. So it's amusing to watch for that reason.
Well, it was all done. Like this was like it's like just a ripoff of something they did.
Yeah.
And it looks so bad on you to do it. Like if you're not even going to do it as well, don't do it. Like you're not going to have, you know, a tank or a Jeep with you and be dressed up in fatigues if you're just this kind of chubby guy going to Connecticut. Don't show it on TV.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I enjoyed the opener, although the pin before 10 count sip was baffling to me and seemed to kill the crowd stone dead. The X Division 3-0 was a little disappointing. Lots of cool spots, but no real flow to it at all. The Kevin Nash stuff. Fuck! Aries and Shelley could have been great, but the focus was entirely on Nash and the Fat Man. Then Backlund came into the ring and totally ballsed up his promo. Was it me or did Kevin Nash seem high? I don't know if I should have read that. I don't know if we should be throwing a...
No, he said seems.
Allegations like
he said
that.
Seems,
okay,
like,
all right.
You know, like that's... I think that...
He was sitting elevated on a platform.
Yeah, well, he is high because he's like 7 feet tall.
There
he's
we go.
Really, he's one of the highest wrestlers there are.
There we go. The Voodoo Kid Mafia stuff was beyond belief.
Yeah.
It was a dreadful idea and it seemed to go on for about half an hour too. Road Dogg looked like a fat Undertaker. And then Christy Hemme came out. Fuck me. This was one of the most cringeworthy promos I've seen. I don't blame Christy. It was a stupid idea to begin with. No one could have pulled it off. Hemme was blubbering this whole thing about China and Lita, and the crowd chanted, "We want wrestling," and boring. And at the end of her long speech, she's told to get back in the kitchen. What the fuck was this? Then Angle and Joe was fantastic, and I really liked the main event too, despite the booking near the end. One thing I want to mention is the crowd. It wasn't always hot, but everyone in the arena seemed to be into stuff. When you watch Impact or a TNA pay-per-view now, there's a sea of bored-looking faces even in the front rows, but on this, nearly everybody seemed to be clued up on the product. It makes a huge difference. I like this show. Good wrestling / awful storylines, but well worth the 99 cents that I paid. 7 out of 10.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. Like, you know, like the crowd was so into this, and that made even the terrible parts kind of bearable.
I certainly felt that way.
And I think like people want to cheer for the alternative. People want to cheer for the underdog. You know, like you know, if bands came out and decided they couldn't be One Direction and were just like, well, we'll just be like One Direction, just a really bad version of it. Like, people don't want that. People just want something completely different. I think that's why ROH, despite their technical problems, are finding like sort of an audience, and Chikara especially,
yep.
and Gorilla and all these sorts of federations, because they are trying to do something deliberately very different than the main product. Whereas TNA now, and even then, it's just like, well, you just watch the main. You want to watch that big show,
exactly. I think, pro wrestling really, it's an art form. It's a creative art form, requires creative writing, creative performances, and with any type of art, you want to see originality. You want people to actually be creative while they're doing it. And I think TNA is sort of like in a strange place where they have to appease to investors and people like Spike. And the way you do that, it seems to be to say, we got Hulk Hogan. We got stars that were from this old company that we have now. Therefore, we're almost as good as this other company that we're trying to emulate. But that goes completely against, you know, what creativity should be.
Well, I think right now we live in a time where people in a lot of broadcast television are chasing numbers, like chasing ratings. And the thing is, like, that doesn't really work because you never catch up. Like, it's much better to have the ratings come to you. Like, if you do something new and different and you get people talking about it, it's going to spread now. Like, we live in a time where it can spread, and it might not be the numbers on TV, but, like, your impact on the internet, your impact worldwide, like... You know, like your actual reaching the people is going to be much, much greater, like your penetration to those sorts of people. And it seems like both the WWE and TNA and a lot of other things in TV are chasing these like numbers which go down each and every week. And it's like they're just trying to appeal to these numbers which are going down. Like, why not? That's what it's like, trying to plug a bucket that's got a bunch of holes in it. It's like,
so you're saying there's no bringing back a Raw?
I think there is. I think there is. I think what you need to do though is relook at the product. Like, this is like, you know, you're not going to get people back on TV doing the same thing you're doing now that's driving people away, you know, and they're like, well, we just need to give more Cena. More Cena draws a number in our thing. It's like, yeah, but even those people are tuning out after a while. The people that are drawing, like, your big segments are drawing less and less numbers, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, why not go the CM Punk Daniel Bryan? It sure draws a shitty rating a couple weeks in a row, but eventually it can build something because it's something new. It's like, well, why not try something new? If what's working isn't really working and you're just, like, fighting this losing battle, like, why not go with something new and different for your television product? And I guess WWE is in a different position because they are so much more than just that television product.
They're a T-shirt company.
T-shirt company, a toy company. Anyways. It seems like they do.
A movie company.
A movie company. And, you know, it seems like with a little work, like, obviously they're making a lot of money in all these areas, but, like, I think any fan could say, you know, but if you did this, you'd make a lot more money. And if you changed that slightly, you'd make even more money. Like, if you made a movie, like you started making low budget movies that are funny with your wrestlers, or low budget horror movies like you guys were talking about.
See
like
no evil.
Yeah, like why would you ever want to try and get Randy Orton into a secondary role in like a family comedy movie? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. Who advises these people, you know? Like, and like the ice cream bar thing, okay? You know, like that was like, and the WWE's like, yeah, we're having a really hard time making them. There's a million ice cream companies that I'm sure would be like, yeah, let's do ice cream bars from now on. Like, go with a small company. Go with Ben and Jerry's. Get Ben and Jerry's to do WWE, and then make your product kind of cool and kind of kitschy, and maybe you get people that way.
See, I mean, again, like, I mean, I'm always trying to be conscious of the fan that they are trying to target. And we have all these thoughts, you know, that sound great to us. But I often wonder, is there a bigger group of fans than us?
There is, definitely. But that even that pool is drying up. Mm-hmm, and so I think, like, and WWE keeps casting that net. And any TV, any broadcaster keeps casting this net, trying to catch the same fish, like, and then there's less and less of them each time, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, why not, like, all these other ones that are swimming around, go for those ones, and, like, try something new. Try and get, like, you're gonna have a 3-hour block of WWE programming and a 2-hour block of TNA programming. Now is the time, more than ever, that you should have something for everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, you should have your, like, legit Brock Lesnar's type guys on there, like your Daniel Bryan, not that they're doing the same thing, but Daniel Bryan, CM Punk, like, legit guys that are believable in the
stuff for your
style.
older audience.
Yeah, and then you have your high flyers, then you have your John Cena stuff too, but you just go for cast a bunch of different nets. Don't just keep casting the same one. Mm-hmm. And it's like WWE now, there is, you know, it's all the focus more than any other time that I think that I've been watching it is just on that main event. Like,
yep.
even the belt, the angle which has the titles wasn't given any storyline, and forget about all the other undercard matches below those. They weren't given at all any story.
Yeah.
You know,
and look what's happened to the mid card and guys like Swagger and Ziggler.
It's fallen apart, you know, and it's just all this focus is just on what works in their eyes, which is the Cena segments, and it's like, well, those aren't working as well as they used to. So something's broken.
We go to our final piece of feedback, and it is from Dante. Wait. His nickname is Dante, but this is actually Alexander from Norway. And
I met this dude.
Yeah, and in fact, he posts a picture of you with himself.
Yeah.
Holding a review, a fucked up 10 out of 10 sign at one of your concerts.
Yeah, it was. We played a series of shows in this university city in Norway, like in halfway up the country, and he came out there and had the sign in the crowd. I'm in the crowd, like, and it was totally not what I expected to see. But I gotta say, I've met a lot of people, and I've mentioned this before internationally because of review.
Is that so?
Yeah, like there's a, you know, like you and actually.
Alexander
gave me like a bunch of guys have come up and given me like wrestling on DVD or like
awesome.
or you know memory keys and stuff like that, and yeah, no, it's awesome. It's really fun because like the last thing, not that I don't like talking about music all the time, but like when you're on tour, it's great to have something that has nothing to do with music to talk to people about, and wrestling is that.
That is amazing to me. The fact that, I mean, like I keep going back to say, like, you know, like, to me, this is just me and my friend John talking about wrestling in a room, in a shitty little closet for, like, maybe an hour or two every single week. And the fact that all the way out in Norway, you could be meeting somebody at one of your concerts, holding up some type of reference to our little podcast. Well, it blows my mind,
people
really.
People keep talking about, like, in this, you know, talking about a broader subject, but it comes back down to it. People keep talking about, like, how we're, you know, we need another Nirvana. And there's never going to be another Nirvana because we don't live in that period anymore. We don't live in a mass culture world anymore. We live in a massive culture world with millions of little mass cultures going on. And, like, the fact is, like you can do something, and if you do it well, you're going to find your audience, you know? And I think that with Review Away, like, you know, you found an audience internationally. And it's like, yeah, it's not, you know, 20,000 people in one city, but there are 20,000, like, worldwide, or, like, you know, there's thousands of people worldwide, like, all spread out. And, like, you know, for a band like I'm in, that's the only reason we're able to make a living doing what we're doing, because we're not, you know, never going to have a hit. Never, ever, ever going to have a hit song, you know? But we're able to, like, have, like, little pockets of people that come and see us and enjoy what we do.
In some ways, it might be even better, right?
Oh, it's way better. Yeah. Way better. Like, you know, mass culture is always terrible. It's always, the stuff that's really popular. Like, I enjoyed the Avengers movie, but it was not a good, it was, like, a fun, good movie to see in the theater. But it wasn't a good film. You know, it's not
a good film on what are you, like, what are you comparing
like,
it
put
to,
it though. This way. Okay, yeah, I should say.
You're about to offend a lot of people.
Yeah, I know. It was a good film. No, it was a good movie. I'm going to say this. I'm going to stick to my guns. It was a good movie. Citizen Kane has nothing to worry about, you know, or like Taxi Driver.
But it was never meant to.
No, exactly.
Kind of
but I think we live in a time. There's little pockets where mass culture gets really interesting in different periods, like the 70s in American cinema, like that, like Taxi Driver, Godfather, like the popular movies were amazing. Like that's the golden age of American cinema. I'd say right now we're going through a golden age of television. All the good television shows are phenomenal television shows. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, mass culture's always just appealed to the masses, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's what The Avengers, like, it is a really fun movie that anyone can get into, you know, no matter what you believe, because it's just a fun ride to go and see in the theater. But, you know, is it going to change anyone on a deep, profound level the same way, like, maybe a Godfather movie would, or maybe Raging Bull, though, would, or you know.
No, it won't.
No, and I think that's the thing about mass culture, is it's always just going for the masses, so it's always just the surface.
And to bring it back to wrestling, I mean, you know, for all our complaints about what the WWE is, we don't realize most of the time that they are catering to a mass audience.
They are catering
to a worldwide audience.
But I think even, like, and I think this is where mass culture screws up sometimes, is sometimes become so concerned with their demographic that they forget that demographics change, you know? Like, the people that listen to Justin Bieber are not listening to Justin Bieber now. They're listening to, like, Skrillex and dubstep, you know? Mm-hmm. And then there's a new crop of kids that love One Direction, you know? And, like, Justin Bieber, I think, is going to have an interesting year, you know? Like, I could be wrong. Like, this could be the biggest record of all time. He could become Justin Timberlake. But I think it's also, like, a really interesting time to watch because that's someone whose demographic has changed, you know? Like, the kids that used to like him are a little older now and don't want to listen to what they listened to when they were kids, you know? And they want to listen to what their older brother and sisters are listening to. Yeah. Or they're fucked up. Yeah, not fucked up. Probably not.
Not yet.
probably Skrillex.
You know? A few years away from fucked up.
Probably a few years, a few millennia away from fucked up. When we get to a parallel timeline where guys yelling is the new singing sweetly.
Even though we only received two pieces of feedback, this has somehow managed to
be the longest
outlength all of our feedback sections. Oh. And that is always the case with Damien.
I know, enjoyable chats.
No, very interesting chats. So, but we go to Alexander from Norway. Man, your Sacrifice 2006 commercial had me scared. I was midway through the final resolution when I heard it. That was almost not funny. What happened was John and I do these promos.
And
I completely forgot. I thought we were doing Sacrifice 2006. Anyway, listen to the law from this past week and
I'm halfway through.
Okay, oh my, this was just when I started watching wrestling full-time. This made me feel old, and it's only 5 years ago. I can't believe how it must feel to have lived through the older pay-per-views. What a time period this was. TNA had a six-sided ring, separate entrances, stipulations no one got, Don West, a short-haired Kevin Nash, a motivated Samoa Joe, text messaging, and a bright future. It still felt a lot like today's TNA, though. Lots of great talent and great wrestling, but with strange angles and stipulations. I suppose this will be their spot for all time, yet I still enjoyed it immensely. As mentioned last week, nostalgia is powerful, and this is only a 5 years old TNA show. I wonder how you guys must feel sometimes. Very happy to hear Damien's back. Review in Abraham, 10 out of 10.
Aw, thank you.
And there we go. Thank you very much, Damien.
Hey, thanks for having me. I had a really fun time, and hopefully this will fill several of your commutes, if you're listening.
Several of your, yes. Absolutely.
Once again, I throw off my podcast listening schedule, but that's fine. We'll do that for the listener.
So what's going on with you, aside from, you know, you're taking a break right now with the band, your
wife? We're starting to actually get, you know, this is why I never said we were going to break up for real. Like, I was like, oh, because we're starting to kind of figure things out with the band as far as, like, what we're going to do for, we got some plans and stuff, and then, yeah, just, like, writing a bunch of different things, you know? Like, I learned now that, you know, it's really making something, like, writing something for TV or film or anything like that, and then seeing it the whole way through to completion, it's going to break your heart. Because, A, it's going to get changed, or, B, it's not going to happen. So now I'm just writing things and being like, oh, yeah, I'm totally detached from this.
What do you mean? Like, you mean, like, in the past you would have written songs and
– songs, but, like, I've written TV shows before network or, like, you know, pitches and stuff. And then you get it back to you, and it's like, that's not what I wanted. But so now I'm just, like, writing some of that stuff.
Is that what you're working on?
Working on some of those things and doing stuff at the Wedge and just, yeah. there's a company that's making a wobbler of me, a bobblehead of me.
A bobblehead, a Damien bobblehead. Abraham bobblehead.
Yep.
That is awesome.
I know. I'm pretty stoked. So that's like, and I got another baby coming. My wife and I made another baby. It's better than a bobblehead.
Almost as good as the bobblehead.
Yeah, like it'll have a bobbly head at first too. You know.
All right. And
we're not supposed to shake those though.
No, you're not.
No.
No, you're not.
Wobbleheads, though. Bobbleheads. Throttleheads, you can
Where
shake.
Can people get the bobblehead?
It's not out yet. They haven't even made it. I took the photos to send it for the... This is like a review away exclusive.
Yes.
Brand
Breaking
new.
News right
this is before it hits the internet, guys. Like, I don't know if I can tell you yet. Okay, there's going to be a throttlehead. No, I'm just kidding. I guess before the end of the year, hopefully.
Before the end of the year.
And, yeah, we're playing, like, you know, playing Japan, Fuji Rock. Going to try and go... what's that steakhouse?
Ribera Steakhouse.
Yeah, I'm gonna try and go there and get a jacket. But
I've got
we booked a day because I'm just after my baby's due, and so we're not touring in Japan. So I'm flying in. I have one day off to go record shopping and trying to find Japanese wrestling stuff.
Oh yeah. Where are you going in Japan?
Just Tokyo.
Tokyo,
and then Fuji.
Do you know like the districts? Have you been to?
Yeah, we played one time in Shinjuku at maybe it was Harajuku with it was at Astro Hall,
okay.
And then another time I think we stayed in Shinjuku.
Yeah,
and there's like a crazy. It's yeah, like me going. I love Japanese. Everything Japanese.
Me too, man.
Film, like yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you know what it's like. It's just so overwhelming when you get there. Yeah. You're like that. When I was there, like the first time, I'm like. We were going to China right afterwards, so I couldn't bring anything with me, so I had to ship it all back. So now I'm like, okay, I'm going to be able to buy records this time.
Yeah, yeah. Like, the record shopping is outstanding. Like, I always tell people who've never been Japanese, the Japanese culture is just, they are extreme about everything. And this includes organization. This includes collections. Mm-hmm. And so you go to a record store in Japan, everything is perfectly organized in
perfect
pristine condition.
Yeah.
Not a speck of dust on these records.
And I limit myself, last time I was in Japan, and this time too, I'm going to limit myself to only Japanese records. Like only,
really?
Because I love Japanese punk, like Burning Spirit style hardcore. It's like this Japanese style of hardcore that I love to death. So, but otherwise, you could go there and you can find any record from anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
And it's there.
It's amazing. And fair prices.
Fair prices, yeah. Like, well, now, obviously, because of horrible natural disasters, the prices are definitely cheap. From what I hear, which is makes me feel like kind of guilty, kind of like a going there, you know, like raiding the land type thing.
But you're helping out with the economy as well.
I guess that's my way of justifying it, you know, eating all the sushi, which then I was like, I'm like, sushi's raw. Is that okay to eat? And I'm like, why am I being such a baby? Of course I'm going to eat sushi. Even if it wasn't okay, even they're like, no, you'll die instantly. I'll be like, it's a risk I'm going to have to take to eat some sushi. So.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But that extends to the wrestling stores as well.
Yeah.
There's like a whole district. I don't know if you've been, but like
no, I haven't. We didn't have a chance to. I'm going this time.
WH Park actually appointed me in the direction of
really. I got to get that name from you.
Yeah, where all the wrestling stores were. They were there's like a New Japan store that sells like New Japan merch, and like they're sort of tiny, but like I don't know how big they are. But you go in and like I'm a huge I was a huge Japanese wrestling fan. So you go in there, you see all these wicked T-shirts that you can't get anywhere else. All these little wrestling figures.
And yeah, because I've seen on highspots.com like the crazy international toys.
And I was in heaven just to go there. You might even be able to pick up a Rivera jacket there.
Well, how much do you think those jackets are?
I don't know.
That's what I was wondering. I'm like, are they really expensive? I'm like, probably.
Yeah.
But then you see some wrestlers that, you know, don't have a ton of money, I imagine.
I can't see them being too much, but enjoy Tokyo.
Thank
enjoy
you. Yeah, Japan. No, I'm looking forward to getting back.
Any other tours coming up that you want to talk about?
Mexico for one day. Going to New Brunswick to play Sappy Fest, if anyone's listening from New Brunswick. Going to Iowa to play... can't remember the name of the festival. Going to West Coast tour in the fall.
Where can people find out about your tour dates?
Just follow me on Twitter, at LeftForDamien. Mm-hmm. And I tweet about wrestling. And, I'm a... You know, I'm no John Pollock, I'm no Wei Ting, but I am a fan, you know.
What? What do you mean? I barely tweet about wrestling.
No, I know, but I mean, like, that's what I'm saying, but you guys have more knowledge than I do. You guys have watched more than I have.
Not much more in my case. Pollock, yes.
But you're also, even your Japanese, like, you drop some serious Japanese knowledge, and I'm like, you know, I'm like, Hayabusa?
Like, that's all you need to know.
Yeah, exactly.
Hayabusa.
The guy from the third tier wrestling company.
Oh, come on. Hayabusa is awesome. But, well, thank you, Damien, for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
I had a lot of fun. Somehow,
I had a great time.
Even without John Pollock, we managed to make it to 2 hours here, but it just seemed to fly by. Thanks for joining us at Left for Damien. at I am John Pollock, at Law Radio, and
You remember who cared about you guys enough to show up today?
Yes. You are certainly the MVP. And,
no, I'm just burying John Pollock for you.
Yeah, he sucks.
The boss needs us. We don't need the boss.
What does he usually say at the end of these? We got Review and Impact coming up with Nate Milton.
Yep, on Thursday or Friday.
On Friday. I'm trying to remember all this.
Next Sunday, there's the Law.
There's the Law.
And then
there's no UFC this week, so no. There's no post show.
And then on Tuesday mornings, you can download Review of Raw. And you can also listen to live Review of Raw after Raw. And then on tonight.
No, it's not live anymore. We stopped doing
the live ones?
Yeah. Oh, we just had too many, dropouts. Okay. I know.
So then Tuesday morning, and then also Monday nights, next Monday night at the one on the Danforth.
Fox and the Fiddle.
Fox and the Fiddle. Which is crazy because that is like literally at the end of my mom's street where my mom used to live.
Well, then you should be dropping by.
I live in the West End now and I have a kid. And the last thing my wife's going
to do. That's no excuse.
Hey, honey, I'm going to go to a bar and hang out with a bunch of people and watch wrestling. She's not going to let me out of the house for that.
Fox and the Fiddle on the Danforth. Maybe one day when Damien's kids grow up and go to college, he will.
Yeah, I'll be there. I'd actually love to go back. I love the Danforth, Riverdale. Yeah, mighty M4K, nice. Born and raised. You know, the kids in the hall used to all live in there, too.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And the Bare Naked Ladies.
More Toronto references for you.
Well, these are international references. If you don't know the kids in the hall, it's internationally, they are the best Canadian export ever.
There we go.
Yes. Well, SCTV. And then fucked up, obviously.
And fucked up.
And then Kids in the Hall.
There we go. So that's it for us. Pick a song, Damien, for us to go out with.
Man, let's go out.
Oh, but before you do that, we're supposed to pick a show to do next week, too, but...
I should pick a show and
saddle you? Why don't you pick a show for us? Yeah. You should pick a show for us, because it was supposed to be John's pick.
I know, but the problem is, like, you guys have done so many shows at this point.
Yeah, I know.
God, I'm trying to think of, like, what would be a fun, weird one.
If you don't have... I mean, yeah.
Oh, you know what? Have you ever done the movie I Like to Hurt People?
No, what is that?
Maybe you should save that one, because you just did a movie not too long ago. But it's Abdul the Butcher's in it, and, like...
What is it, like a documentary on...
It's like a documentary, but it's in kayfabe.
In kayfabe. Okay, let me read the synopsis on IMDb.
But I was thinking maybe not next week because you guys just did a movie.
Is this like a dramatic?
Yeah, it is kind
of
like
the Sheik wreaks havoc throughout the sleaziest locales of the American wrestling circuit, maiming, mauling, and living up to his life's cold code. I like to hurt people, and it stars Ed Farhad as the Sheik.
Yeah.
Andre the Giant, Ox Baker, Bobo Brazil, Abdullah the Butcher. You know what? Even though we've done a show, a movie recently, let's go with
it. This is a lot of fun.
I like
it. I think the listeners, I'm sure you can track this down online.
I Like to Hurt People, starring who's who, including Eddie Kreischman, who's nephew we know.
Yeah.
Eric Kreischman.
But there's like, everyone's in it. It's tons of, like, 70s, like, who's who of 70s wrestling.
I Like to Hurt People from 1985. That is Damien Abraham's pick for us for review away next week and a song to go out with.
And I think we should end with the song that I was listening to last night, which is Exodus by Pusha T, the diss on Drake and Lil Wayne.
Oh, I didn't even know about
you
this.
You didn't hear this yet?
I've not been following much hip-hop lately.
This is the beef that broke last night because Lil Wayne also has done an answer track back.
Really?
Yeah. But
immediately?
Immediately.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, Pusha T, I love the clips.
I love clips. Yeah. And you know what, like... You know, obviously, I don't want anyone to get hurt if this becomes real, but, you know, like, this is to me like a wrestling feud where you have two guys that you think are awesome in Lil Wayne and Pusha T, like, both are great lyricists, and they're about to, like, go back and forth. Like.
Yeah. I never know how much of it is, like, okay, we're going to end this podcast soon, but, like, I mean, keep hitting on topics.
Yeah,
that
you
got to
understand. I think it's the same way. I think the same with Fox News. I think the same with all that stuff, where it is, like, you know, people know that what sells is characters, and you got to play a character.
Yeah, this is what part of the reason what drove me to hip hop.
Yeah.
In the first place is these rap battles.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. And they must know. Like, obviously, there's times where it spills and becomes real. You know, like
it hasn't in many years though. I think like obviously big into.
Well, they know it's better for business.
Yeah,
way, you know.
Then that's the main thing. It's great for business. Everybody benefits.
And I think Nas and Jay-Z. Like, I don't think Jay-Z would have gone to the level he is now without that beef with Nas.
Same with Nas.
And I think Nas had elevated Nas's game. I think Nas was like, I think Nas unfortunately came out the loser in that in the end. But I think his songs were on par.
I think most people would take Ether over the.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Ether is like one of the best diss songs ever, and psychological, such a deep like. Where you chase your building called ugly, like such a the shots he takes at Jay-Z. But that's like, hopefully this will be the same, you know?
Yeah. What's your favorite, quickly, what's your favorite rap diss?
Have you ever heard Linda Tripp by Company Flow?
No, I have not.
There was like this guy, I forget his name, he was like another white indie rapper, and he took a shot at Company Flow at LP, and he made this song called LP, spelled P-E-E, and then LP calls him up. And gets him on the phone, and the guy just like, the guy had this whole thug image. I remember reading interviews with the guy, and he was like, at the racetrack, talking about spending money. And LP calls him up, and the guy backs down on the phone, and he recorded it and put it into a song.
That is brilliant.
Trip. And
like,
it's like,
I love that.
Oh, it's amazing.
I love the creativity.
The guy, he gets the guy, he's like, it was like, you know, like, he's like, I didn't want beef with you, but now you're making it really hard to ignore you. And the guy's like, no, man, I don't want beef. I just want to be down. And like,
that's
really sample
awesome.
That and
that
stuff.
Is brilliant.
Oh, it's incredible.
That's
like,
great.
And it's like, and LP, I think, is a great lyricist, too. The Killer Mike record he just produced is also brilliant and stuff. But I don't know. I think for, like, diss tracks and Ether, like, anytime someone does a diss and it's not like, oh, you're gay, you're, like, you're a bitch. Like, something like, because obviously, like, that. But like when someone, like, an Ether, when he goes, like, really psychological, like, once aside from the homophobia and stuff, but when he goes at him and, like, you know, were you called ugly as a kid? Like, why don't you hug me? I smile looking at you. Like, that is when he, like, really cuts deep. And the same with Linda Tripp, when you're like, no, I'm just going to totally take this person apart.
Mm-hmm.
Like, totally expose them. And
totally.
And I hope this Pusha T, Lil Wayne one, has some classics to come out of it.
And that's what we are listening to right now. And thank you again, Damien,
for having me. Anytime. Anytime you want to be bored.
No, never. But thank you, John Pollock, for getting sick so that I could have this time with Damien. And here we go, Pusha T to close us off.
Beef is best served like steak. Well done, get a gun in your face, bitch nigga. People have you praying to God. Move your kids, have you hiding your mom. When you hide behind the mother niggas, but they ain't killers, they ain't pulling them triggers. Fuck niggas. People, how you keying our cars? Heart broke, yours don't look like ours. Them niggas ain't dying for you. Them niggas ain't dying for you. Throwing that flag up, running round, you hot shit. Taking half of everything you get. Yeah, them contract all fucked up. I guess that means you all fucked up. You signed to one nigga, then signed to another nigga, then signed to three niggas. Now that's bad luck. Damn that shit, even the odds now. You better off selling this hard now. You call it living out your dreams. You can't fly without your wings. You get it. Jeremy Scott's all camouflage. You can't hide it from yourself, career sabotage. I was really in that travel lodge. You just lying through your catalogs. Where the blood and the battle scars? We the ones the judge juggling them gavels on. Put me to the body, nigga. First 48, put us to them bodies, nigga. Round here, we don't play that. A to the K that, spray that, lay back. Keep your beats, nigga. We much rather shit your bitch, nigga. Bitch, nigga. 3 million can't hide that. It shows in the homes, I done tried that. That's why you'll never be my neighbors. Smile as you waving, but we know you niggas hate us. Fuck you playing games for. Don't be scared, get everything you came for. They got you talking that big shit. Little do you know we don't miss shit. Them niggas using you as a pawn. You see they never loaded they guns. Now you out here all by yourself. Ask Steve Jobs, wealth don't buy health. Yeah. Beef is best served like steak. Well done, get a gun in your face, bitch nigga. People have you praying to God. Move your kids, have you hiding your mom. Beef is when you hide behind the mother niggas. But they ain't killers, they ain't pulling the
niggas, fuck niggas.